Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and I am very excited for you today because we have a special presentation of the premiere of the Survivor South Africa 8 wrap-up with Shannon Gus and Mike Bloom. They've got a great guest. They are going to be talking with Rob Bentley, not the Rob that sucks. This Rob definitely does not suck. They're going to talk about the exciting premiere of Survivor South Africa 8. And the reason why I'm dropping this now is because I am going to be their guest on the Survivor South Africa 8 episode 2 wrap-up this weekend once I'm back up and running. Now, if you're saying, wait, hold on, Rob, what are you talking about? Survivor South Africa? How do I even watch this? Where is this? Of course, that Survivor South Africa is airing right now in South Africa. And of course, that it is a real perk of being a patron of Rob's podcast to get access to all of the international Survivor links and the watch parties that we're doing. If you're interested, definitely come on over and check out what's going on over at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Or if you're already watching, enjoy this wrap-up and be sure to subscribe to be sure to get it every single week in your podcast feed and get ready for me to join Shannon and Mike for episode number 2 this weekend. In the meantime, let me just spend 30 seconds to tell you about our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy, and it's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, here is the episode 1 premiere wrap-up with Shannon Gus, Mike Bloom, and Rob Bentley. Enjoy and get ready for me to hop on in to Survivor South Africa wrap up for episode number 2 later this weekend. Take care. Enjoy the show.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor.
New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Hello everyone, Shannon Garcia getting you ready for RHAP's coverage of the first week of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. Such exciting times. Mike Bloom and I were joined by a legend of Survivor South Africa, the great Rob Bentley on the recap, and that was 2.5 hours. And then Mike was joined by the first boot of the season. So if you guys want to skip ahead to the exit interview, that's 2.5 hours in. If you want to listen chronologically, if we ever reference the exit interview in the recap, we do give context because Rob had not heard it. So you should be able to do it like that, but listen at your own leisure. Either go right now and listen on to the recap, go straight ahead to the exit interview and come back. Whatever you do, we hope you enjoy, and I will see you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, here to discuss episode 1, an epic premiere, and I have two amazing people with me on the line to talk about it. Please, as always, welcome in my co-host, the Mike Bloom, to my Shannon Gus, and I can say that because our names are in the credits. It's the great Mike Bloom. Mike, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm so excited. Now, are the credit versions of us different than the regular versions of us? Is this like our bizarro doubles? Is this some sort of offshoot of us?
Yeah.
We're going to get into a lot as to what that exactly means, but I'm intrigued to see if credit Mike and Shannon diverge at all from regular Mike and Shannon.
Credit Shannon is so much cooler than me. She's on TV right now. I love her.
She drives a motorcycle.
Yeah. I love credit us. They're way better than real us. But yeah, so in the credits, it's really fun. And I have been waiting for so many months to do that blank to my blank. It has just been eating at me. So I'm glad I finally got that out of my system. But before we get on about what that entailed and what this episode entailed, I have to welcome in our incredible first guest. He is passing on the baton to a new crop of players as the winner of Survivor Island of Secrets. He is also, more importantly, a Chizzy winner. He is someone who we have said, and who I think everyone kind of says, is one of the best players of all time. It is the great Rob Bentley. Rob, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Shannon. What a nice introduction.
What you don't know, Rob, is while Shannon was talking, I was actually pointing at you behind your back. Just like, this is Rob. This is the guy you're supposed to introduce. And you had no idea.
No, thank you guys for having me. This will be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. This season looks phenomenal. And yeah, I think this will be a nice chat.
Rob, before we get into everything with the episode, the last time we spoke to you on the podcast was your winner deep dive, which was almost 2 years ago, but there has not been any Survivor South Africa in between those things. How have you been since we spoke to you last?
I've been formidable. It's been great. Winning Survivor has really been a good impact on my life. Really, I must say. Best gift ever.
Have you been? Because I saw like every Survivor South Africa winner seemed to have like a bit of a tour, like a winner tour with it. Like, you know, Tom Schwartz did like the boxing thing and then the calendar. Like, what have you been doing? Like, were you doing stuff with like KB Union, Mark? Like, there was stuff going on with you as a winner, right?
Yeah, look, of course, I did a few campaigns with Survivor, the guys that endorsed it, like, yeah, KB Union, Mark, Mahindra, the and them. But what happened is soon after that, obviously COVID hit for us. So it kind of slowed things down quite a bit. However, now there is something on the horizon. I mean, we'd all know that I'm a single bachelor, so there might be something coming up there soon with that. And
oh my God.
And then there's also an app that I've actually created. I don't know if you guys know about the problem we have with gender-based violence in this country.
I do not.
Yeah, not enough.
We're having quite a bit of an issue with security, especially for women and children. So I've actually developed an app that will actually sort all that out, which will be launching in September. So that'll all go public in September.
Wow.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, so Survivor winner, app creator, very prominent bachelor, like you are challenging Anesu in terms of just the number of hats that you wear, Rob.
No, I've got nothing on Anesu. She's on another level than one. Yo!
Okay, Rob, if you're teasing that you're going to be the bachelor, I will find it at all costs and I will watch it. So I hope that's what you're saying.
Stay tuned, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember back in the day when Mr. Rob Bentley, you know, jokingly tweeting that he was about to go out and do another 39-day adventure, and like the internet went crazy, and then it got confirmed that you were not doing that whatsoever.
Okay, that is a show, that's an American show. Okay, I don't think I can say anything. The NDA won't allow it, but it's regarding MTV.
Oh. All right.
You guys want to show the Americans do MTV? Call me out for that.
Really? I can't tell, like, because I don't trust you based on Survivor. And also, like, based on you saying you're going out to things, you know, if you're not the bachelor and you have teased a little bit that you're going to be the bachelor, I'm going to be pretty heartbroken about it. So
you just have to look into those blue eyes, Shannon, and you just fall. This is what happened with his season. Yeah. And now we're here.
No, guys, let's see. Let's just wait and see.
Okay, well, leave it at that, but you better be the bachelor. You don't tease something like that and just be lying about it. I can't take it twice, Rob. I'm not doing this two times. But all right, let's talk about Survivor South Africa, what we are all here to chat about, not South African bachelor for some reason. Rob, give us your general thoughts about what you thought of the first episode.
Okay, you know what I love about it the most is that these people are there to play. Clearly, there's no kumbaya, there's no you know, being nice to each other. They are lying on day one, and they haven't even developed that numbness that you start developing down the game. So when you first come into the game, you kind of, most people at least, they kind of want to be nice, they want to play nice, they want to be perceived as a good person. However, these people are going in there and they're lying from off the bat. No scum. I think it's beautiful. It's a group of strong players that I think will show us stuff that we've never seen before, because these people don't give two shits. And I think it's Survivor. That is what we want to see. So yeah, I think good gameplay coming up.
I mean, I couldn't agree more, especially good gameplay coming up, because the one thing, I mean, I love so much about this premiere, the biggest thing for me is, to your point, Rob, this is a group that is here to play, but I think even more enjoyably for me at this moment, they're not playing very well on the whole. And I think that is absolutely fine. In fact, I really enjoy that. Listen, we all can't be Rob Bentley and have one of the most commanding performances of all time, especially with new players. There's like a little bit of time for you to settle into the waters, to get used to the temperature of the hot tub, right? And that's what we're getting right now. But you sort of couple that with the fact that so many of these people have been waiting for so long, especially given the circumstances, to play this game, they are chomping at the bit to the point that they're like chewing their own fingers off. Mm-hmm. That's how hungry they are to play the game. And as a result, we got so many mistakes in this first episode, and I love it so much. Like, don't get it wrong. I don't mean this to be like, let's insult all the contestants for the gameplay that they had, because there were mistakes that were made, but oh, it was so entertaining as a result. Just so, so good. This cast really confirming all the things we thought preseason, Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, Dino is fingerless, if you're talking about chewing off your fingers, and I love that he can have a laugh about it, like, on social media and on the show itself, as he talks about himself, like, having more bad moves than a drunk white boy in a club. Couldn't agree more. The moves were not so suave. We'll talk about Dino for sure, but, like, yeah, even the people who were playing well, ridiculous things were happening. Rhaenyra pointing at Jason is instantly iconic. It's the kind of thing where, like, if you see a clip of that on social media and you're not compelled to watch this episode, how are you a Survivor fan? That is just such an incredible moment. And I love it because we did connect Rhaenyra to Verna. They know each other. They're from the same place. They're both, like, these Christian super fans. And this was the clue-eating moment for me because he had a stellar episode. It will be reflected in the chizzy points. We'll talk about the move, the pros and the cons, but he did very well. But he's still pointing at someone's head. And every time Jason looks at him, he's scratching his head, and it's a ridiculous thing to do. And to me, that's the clue-eating moment, and that's just instantly iconic and was such a highlight to me in an episode that was so good, you know, all the way around.
Yeah. I've never seen anyone make it do a blindside in front of them like that, literally behind their back. Literally behind their back. It was ridiculous. Yeah.
That's not a blindside, like, that's a sight side. It's in front of his eyes, literally.
No, I mean, it's literally in your blind spot. It's a blind spot blindside. And I love how it's followed up with Rhaenyra pulling Dino aside, like, did you get it? It's like, yeah, of course he got it. You were pointing at this man for 30 seconds straight. And then they immediately have to be like, okay, we have to go. Jason's right behind us. There was so much great, I would say, you know, the overall, the edit even of the episode was a lot of fun, especially watching it back in retrospect. I know fans have some stuff to say about, like, how the puzzle sort of felt a little choppy, but watching this episode again, I think one of my favorite things to watch was, like, the downfall of Jason, how he starts in such a big position, right? Like, he's stepping up at this as the shelter builder. He's designated as the guy to make fire. But even when he's building the shelter, you have Nicole and Marisha joking of, like, you have to tell us what to do or we're going to vote you out. And clearly they didn't mean it at the moment, but that's what happens at the end of the episode. This was such a spectacular downfall. And I think Jason himself would say that, like, it was absolutely wild to see the arc of Jason over the course of these 73 minutes.
Yeah, Rob, what did you think about that downfall? Because obviously Jason starts off in a good spot. He's in a majority with so much fodder in the rest of the tribe. Of course, like, half of that fodder does become immune. But there was more than enough that it shouldn't have been him. He throws out an ally's name in Amy. He's trying to do a lot, obviously, to align with Sean. You said before we got on the phone that you were watching the downfall happen. Like, what was going through your mind in seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, look, he came in quite a good position. People clearly liked him. I mean, he's an engineer, he's an asset to his tribe. He made it clear to them as well. So they kind of looked to him for guidance, especially with building the shelter. So he kind of established a set of dominance there off the bat. However, he pushed it a bit. Like, you know, he bragged a bit about his profession. He failed at the fire challenge. And then also in the actual challenge, he was falling all over the show. So he slowly but surely started showing kinks to his armor. And then the nail in the coffin for me was how he handled things pre-tribal, like basically telling people this is who we're voting for and just dominating too much, being too strong of a force. You know, leaders are elected. He kind of just made himself the leader. I mean, someone even saw it coming to say that, you know, this guy is putting himself in leadership position. He's trying not to, but he is. We can see it. And so obviously this tallest trees catch the most wind, and he couldn't fight it thereafter. He just spiraled down. It was terrible to see, but yeah, it was made for good entertainment. When he came in, he said he'll be the greatest Survivor player ever.
I feel like a lot of people are saying that. And Rob, you're the one that people keep evoking in, like, our preseason interview saying, I'm going to play like Rob Bentley. And we were concerned about all of those people who had, like, the highest of hopes. And now we see you come and try and play a Rob Bentley game. Like, sometimes that's not that easy. Like, sometimes you end up going home first. And there were a lot of people who said that, and they might meet similar fates.
No, but you don't make yourself the leader. What you do is you lead by example. You work hardest. You you just do what you do, and people will naturally gravitate towards that. I mean, we're seeing it now with Anisu. She's staying calm, collect, chilled, and people are just gravitating towards her. In an environment that is harsh, you know, everyone there is a bit like, you know, you're very confused. And now, if all of a sudden, if you see someone who's very chilled, it looks like they know something that you don't, and you gravitate towards that calm, relaxed person. And that's why they're going towards her, because the energy is nice and chilled. That's how she's doing.
So I know that, Rob, you were also part of the tribe that went to the first tribal council this season. I know Teresa was going to say a tribal council, like, you know, this is when the bonds get made. There's only talking up to this point. We saw what happened with, you know, the amigos on Saula in your season. Do you predict a similar type of trajectory for Zamba right now? Do you think this was sort of like their unifying moment where they're going to be able to move forward as a big group?
Yeah, look, what I can say is those early losses, especially what it did with us in Seoul, is that it made our bonds stronger, it fortified us, it made us battle ready. We walked into tribal councils thereafter with people who've never seen tribal council, and we mopped the floor with them. I mean, Sipe did it countless times. For her, she was comfortable there. So, but it also brought Seoul stronger together, because we had been through this process so many times together. So I do think early losses are not always a bad thing. Fortifies you.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about Rainier, because I want to go through the pros and cons. Like, this to me is Rainier's move. He is the one who puts out the name, and I think he's the one who executes it. Obviously, some stuff happening about a majority tribe that's going to vote out Jason, but to me, this is on him. So we can talk about the pros and cons with it. I see a lot of pros. I see he was uncomfortable with Jason. He saw Jason as a bit of a loose cannon. Jason is throwing out Amy's name, who's an ally that you made 2 days ago. Like, we haven't even had the first vote. You're throwing out allies' names, clearly for a relationship with Sean, which is like a side thing. That's beginning to take precedence, like a few mistakes coming from Jason. But I do think for Rainier, as you said, Rob, like, can this fortify them? Because I think the worst thing that could happen would be like a very split tribe swapping soon. When I see a random draw for tribes, I'm thinking these tribes maybe won't be around so long. So I would, as a fan, be operating under the assumption that we're swapping soon. Best case scenario, you go in with this kind of fluid mentality. You don't know who's on the outs. You don't have people who are going to flip from you. And I think that they could have gone in the direction of just like drawing that clear line between the majority and the outsiders. This way they can maybe encourage more fluidity, or at least make it seem like it's a little bit more fluid. But I think that Rainier needs to come in now and smooth over this group to create a unified group, because the worst thing would be that he just took out someone who was going to work with him long term in Jason, and kept people like a Sean, like a Keon, who know they're on the outs and are not going to stick with him very long in the event of a tribe swap.
Yeah, look, Rainier is definitely in a good position, because he sparked that entire blindside. It literally began with him. The conversation that he had with Jason was Jason's downfall. So definitely great credit to him.
Yeah, I think to that point, like, this was a unifier in this regard. Yes, Jason was part of this alliance of what, 6 or 7, where it was basically everyone except for Sean, Keon, and Teresa. And yes, you think, oh, voting out one of your alliance members so early on is a bad thing to do. But I mean, I can imagine that when Amy and the other women find out that Jason's going after them, it's going to make them feel uncomfortable with the alliance. So it was almost like Rainier hoping to keep that majority, you know, tight together. Plus, you have people like Sean, who doesn't even need other people villainizing him. He's already digging his own hole that you're very confident keeping him in. He does not need to be the first boot here, because, you know, there's a very good chance he could very easily go at this next tribal council, or even a Teresa as well, who I'm sure people will speculate, did she get something on Immunity Island? So, like, Rainier has targets set up that, yes, maybe there's a swap coming soon, but if he's thinking about the immediate future, he does have this ironclad alliance that, ironically enough, had he kept in Jason, would not be as strong. As Jason himself said, what Rainier basically did was, like, you know, spurn the alliance to save the alliance. He got rid of one of his own in order to help unify these people moving forward.
Yeah, I just worry for Rainier, because I do think he has so much fodder. Like, if they were to go all the way down to the merge, like, their little group could stick together forever. They're 5 now with Anella and the girls. I just worry that, like, someone like Teresa knows she's on the outs and she's not going to stick with them, like Sean and Keon. So it's about either having the time to vote them out or bringing them into the fold. And I think that because he made this move and he is the one who, you know, changed the structure of the alliances, it's on him now and on the whole majority to kind of smooth over those relationships so that they aren't just doomed to emerge because they only have basically a group of five. But I still like the move. I think that Jason wasn't necessarily in as good a position as it might have seemed. Like, to me, I think I agree. Like, his conversation with Rhaenyra, like, he's making Rhaenyra throw out Aemys' name, and Rhaenyra is very uncomfortable. He says he feels manipulated. Like, all of those feelings definitely will make someone want to turn against you. But if you even see that when the girls are talking to Dino, they don't include Jason when they talk about their numbers. They include Dino in that six. And they seem kind of wary of Anella for being close to Jason. So I'm wondering if there was like a little bit more, as you said, Rob, all the other stuff about maybe losing fire, the challenge, maybe he came out way too fast out of the blocks. Like, there's a lot of reasons, but I don't necessarily think he was in that good a position for someone who should have been like a core part of this majority. Were you seeing that as well, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, he was in a beautiful position to just smooth sail. He should have just turned down the taps a bit and relaxed. He wanted to play too hard too soon. He reminds me of someone who from season six. It was the guy with Seamus. I don't know if you.
Yeah.
Oh, we definitely did.
Similar position to Seamus. Yeah. Right, where Seamus was trying to make that big move against Tom. I really turned people off to him. I think Seamus maybe had a little bit more pros to him. I think you mentioned, Rob, and we're going to have an exit interview with Jason at the end of this podcast, where even he himself mentioned what you pointed out, Rob, that like he felt like the reason why he had to be so, for lack of a better term, balls to the wall when he got back to camp is because he felt between the fire challenge and between his performance in the immunity challenge, he thought, okay, maybe the target is on me. I have to start scrambling. Oddly enough, his scrambling did put that target on him.
Correct, yeah, that was the nail in the coffin. I mean, he was fine. If he had just, I mean, look, one thing I can also say, and when it comes to challenges, especially the first few challenges, we are nervous. We won't perform our best. So I don't blame him for falling and all that kind of stuff, because your first challenge, you really do feel the pressure. You want to prove to your tribe that you're an asset. You want to make sure that people back home can see, you know, you at your best. So you are very nervous, and it's very easy to make mistakes. So and in that aspect, I don't really blame him. I understand. Yeah. I know what it feels like.
But even in that, like, as we're saying, like a fairly unstable position or maybe not as great as it might have seemed, like, I think the problem is he was just trying to do so much. Like, if you're worried about your performance, like, you just stick with your nice little majority and see that out. But he was trying to do so much, mostly around Sean. He seemed so concerned that Sean would go and they clearly, like, struck up a bond. But there was such an easy out to this, like, what he eventually does, which is make a Keon. They have isolated themselves. They are the targets. Keon is a completely fair person to go instead of Sean physically for the challenges. Make it that. But instead, he's trying to make doubly sure, like, maybe Keon was too close to home to the Sean vote for him. So now he's talking about Dino and trying to get, obviously, Dino's immune. So he's trying to get to Dino through the girls. And now we're throwing out Aemys. You know, the girls are too tight and they're tight with Dino. Parts of this were true. Like, we do see the girls talking to Dino. There's some legitimacy to that. But it wasn't threatening enough. And Dino obviously seems enough in with someone like a Rhaenyra who informs him on the vote that it wasn't enough of a problem for them, for him to paint it as this big thing and throw out an ally's name before the first vote. That would be alarm bells for me, where I would be like, where is your sense of loyalty? Where is the predictability? Where we made an alliance yesterday and Aemys already the name on your lips. So that's what I'm saying is I understand it from Rhaenyra. Rob, would you have been making a similar decision in Rhaenyra's situation, or would you just kind of keep an eye on Jason, but maybe just get rid of the cannon fodder until then and keep Jason under your pigeon wing?
Look, one thing I've learned is never say no to anyone on Survivor. If it's a no, say I'll think about it, or, you know, at least show that you are approachable. You can you're willing to negotiate, you're willing to have conversations. Never just shut someone down and say no. Now, the way that Jason spoke to him, I could see there that it was very, very like sort of forceful, demanding that this is what must happen, this will happen. Jason was being way too hard. And it naturally, you obviously will then realize, look, I can't work with this person because it's their way or the highway. And then I think that's why he decided to pull the trigger on him. And it was probably definitely the right move. I would have done the same thing if I was Rhaenyra. And he's now established himself as quite a dominating force on their tribe now, because he was able to single-handedly spark that entire blindside. But my big question that I don't understand is, what did Sean, why did Sean write Keon down? I thought they were friends. See where it came from.
Welcome to Survivor of.
I mean, let's talk about everything, Sean, here, because we thought Sean would be a wild card preseason, but somehow he has even more defied our expectations in that he puts on. And I know, you know, I got to watch this episode with some of the patrons of Rob as a podcast. And the question got thrown out to me of like, oh, is Sean putting on a performance that he knew that Jason was going? So he decided to like almost deviate the target onto him. Absolutely not. Sean is not that good. I think Sean, and the reason why Sean votes for Keon is I think Sean does 100% think that he's going. That's what he tells Keon before Tribal Council. I think the vote for Keon was a tactic for him to save himself. Like, I can imagine Jason approaches him and is like, okay, it's either you or her, so I think you're going to have to vote for her.
Well, he said as much in his vote. Yeah,
that's exactly what Sean does. So yeah, it's a little confusing, right? Because we see Sean and Keon, they're the hidden Flint buddies. We got it. We'll talk about that at some point too. Searching through the rice in front of everybody is just like number 5 or 6 on the list of weird things that happen in this episode. But it was just a move out of self-preservation, and it's absolutely in Sean's wheelhouse to vote against his closest ally in the very first vote of the season because he thinks it might be him.
See, I assume that Sean was trying to act really obvious in the hope that everyone thinks like, well, we can't vote for him because he's clearly trying to draw votes to him. Like, he must have an idol. You know, the kind of thing where it's like, it's so obvious that it's too obvious, so you can't vote for him. Like, I thought he was being so loud and so extra that you would just think like, clearly he's doing something really sketchy and I just don't want any part of it. Which I guess, you know, it's an unnecessary thing. Like, I think the thing is just like, Keon is worse possibly in challenges. Like, let's just throw it on her. But he probably felt really defenseless in that moment and he just went like all out in that. And for Jason to attach himself to a character like that so hard, where he's just campaigning him with so much of his game. And we saw that was just like a nail in the coffin for him. So I definitely think like, don't attach yourself to such a wild card. But Jason himself can be a wild card, but he just like was willing to go down with Sean's sinking ship. And I don't think Sean would have done that for Jason.
Yeah. Rob, do you have, if you were in Tribal Council and you see, cause there were definitely some fiery Tribal Councils in your season, but I don't think, especially in the first Tribal Council this season, for Sean to be so forward of not only A, it's me, but B, like, let me also try to expose a bunch of other people, almost like take them out with me along the way. I mean, I don't know how you can put yourself in the place of some of these people, but what would have been your reaction had someone in your season done something like Sean did so early on?
Yeah, I mean, he blatantly says that he's the hardest worker in camp and, you know, the best thing for the tribe is to keep me around. I would have started smelling an idol there. You know, the way he was so confident, it would have made me think, okay, maybe this guy's an idol because he wants us to pile the votes up on him.
Yeah.
But he didn't have. So what does that mean for the next tribal council? And on top of that, he went and turned on his own friend. Like, he went and wrote down Kian. Kian. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what he's doing. It's like the kamikaze mission right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Again, like, maybe, like, I'm so glad to share that you think he's playing 4D chess. I love Sean. I don't think he's doing that.
What do you think he's playing, doing then?
I think he's just trying to survive until the next day.
How does, like, that help him survive?
Because he's just like, I think he's in spiral mode. Because I think you also have to look at the reaction of when he finds out that he survived. Right? Like, yes, if he was trying to draw all that unto himself to play an idol, then I don't know if he would necessarily have that reaction of him like Tony Vlachos fist pumping.
No, well, he's not trying to play. He has no idol. I think he's trying to make everyone else think he's drawing all the votes so that they don't vote for him because they assume he has an idol. So no one votes for him. So they vote for Keon.
So then why would he be so celebratory when he's not voted out?
Well, he doesn't know how it's going to go. Like, that anyway is a really difficult mission. Like, I mean, yeah, he had no idea what was going to happen. It was really scary. He had to vote for his number one ally. He wasn't kept in the loop on anything. Like, that must have been really terrifying for him.
Do you know who saw this coming?
No.
Do you know who saw this coming? Teresa.
Yeah.
I still want to tackle her a bit, but she's very observant. She reads people very well. And she literally said that Sean has got a domineering personality, and he's going to hang himself. And that's exactly what he did. And she saw it coming. That is a player that I also am noticing that that's where her strength is. she's incredible at reading people. She quietly sits there and just watches. And she saw Sean would do exactly this, and that's what he did.
Yeah. I love Teresa so much. I could not agree with you more, Rob, that I loved every time we cut to her in confessional. She got a lot in this episode for obvious reasons. But to your point, like, she was so observant of everything between that thing with Sean, between, oh, Jason is being sent to this fire challenge. That tells me he's part of the majority, because if he happens to get something, the majority feels like they could trust him as opposed to sending an outsider. All her reads were absolutely correct. Absolutely. I think, unfortunately, what this shows is, like, you can have the reads right, but if your position isn't great, those reads might not amount to anything. And Teresa is still there, and she definitely has room to maneuver. But I mean, for someone who feels like she didn't fit in with her tribe almost immediately, she's got a pretty damn good read on what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I always talk about, like, the currency of the game being, like, either awareness or social capital. And I feel like Teresa is an example of why social capital is the dollars and awareness maybe is the cents, because you can't do anything without relationships to use. But I was worried for the whole episode. I would have been really heartbroken if she was the first boot. And I was yelling at the TV, screaming in celebration when they sent her to Immunity Island. And it's one of the reasons that I really like Immunity Island, because I think that Survivor at its core should be fair and balanced. Like, it's hard for some types of players at the beginning, then that should kind of turn on its head at the merge and become difficult for opposite types of players. But every advantage that we see makes it better, usually for, like, the alpha type players. And it's hard to be someone who's not the best in challenge if you maybe doesn't fit in demographically right at the beginning, and you never get the time to get your feet under you. Something like Immunity Island helps those people who are perceived as weaker, and it gives them options, and it gives them power, and it gives them at least a little bit of time and salvation. And that's what she's got. Now she comes back to a tribe where they voted out someone who was in their majority yesterday. They have the fact that Sean voted against Keon, so they're split up. They have Dino, who's now not immune, and he's obviously buried himself, which we'll talk about. Like, there's so much going on that I think she could be okay now. And I think without Immunity Island, maybe Jason can just say, hey, just Teresa, that's not near enough to Sean. There's no way this is going to go badly. Like, we'll take her out, and then we'll still have fodder before Sean. And no one kind of gets all antsy with it. And then she just goes home and none of this happens. But by taking out that element and just causing a little bit of chaos and kind of, like, breaking open the pool table, this is what we get instead. So I really enjoyed the way that that played out with Immunity Island.
Yeah, no, really, really, I'm glad she's staying around, because it gives her time. Sometimes a player needs nothing but time to find, because obviously initially, you know, some players are perceived as weak. It reminds me of C-Pay, for example. C-Pay nearly was nearly the first boot at a stage for us. However, when she survived that first tribal council, it gave her the time to show us her strength, and her strength was immense. I mean, she's one of the strongest players that have ever played the game. And we didn't see that at first. And I think I'm hoping that we get to see more of Teresa, because I believe that her strength is still to be seen properly, because so far she's been very impressive. But initially, yeah, the tribe obviously wouldn't count her as an asset, because she might not be the best with physical challenges. However, her strength lies elsewhere.
I'm wondering, because, yeah, Teresa, even when they first line up on those mats through the random draw, she's not feeling good, which is interesting, especially compared to someone like Nicole, right, who's like, we have Marisha, the buff lady on our tribe. There's so much physical strength. I'm feeling really good right now. It's really interesting to see how much those confessionals differ, where I think Nicole and Teresa, both of them would not necessarily consider themselves physical assets. And while Nicole is happy about the draw, because that means that, okay, I'm going to be protected due to how many strong people there are on the tribe, you have someone like Teresa, who's exactly feeling the opposite of, I don't see myself really relating to a lot of these people. And maybe that's what it comes down to, is that maybe just Teresa didn't necessarily find people in the moment that she related to, as opposed to Nicole, who immediately falls in with someone like Marisha and Amy.
Yeah, but I think that's what it is. It's about relating. It's not just about physical strength, unless you, like, continuously screw up challenges and people are really mad about that. But, like, if you can find your people, you'll be forgiven for that. And someone like Nicole fits in really naturally to possibly, like, a friendship with Amy, to a really natural, like, maternal connection with Marisha, who she says, like, she also lives on a farm. Marisha is a mother. Nicole comes across as quite young. Like, it's such a natural, innate connection. And well done to all three of those women for finding those bonds and for finding that natural connection. But for Teresa, those options aren't there. And that's what we talk about in terms of, like, a demographic difficulty that some people can have, and you just don't fit in with people who maybe you don't connect with culturally, in gender, in age, and to resource stood out. And even though this is a very diverse cast, like the way that it shook up a little bit with the random draw became a difficult thing for her. And I love what you say, Rob, about time, because like the gift of time is just essential, I would say, for those players in the first few days. Like, give them a moment to get to know them and to break through some of those like initial really difficult barriers. Some people never get that chance. But if Charisse now can kind of push some people in front of her, win a few challenges, like she could get her feet under her. And that is a gift to her. And that is something that I'm really glad is happening, because it can be so difficult for these players who aren't perceived as fitting into the game. Just give them a moment and like maybe they'll fit.
Correct. Yeah. And I must say the three blondes are hot. It's just putting it out.
I mean, when we did our preseason cast assessment, we happened to have separated, you know, by gender five at a time. And Shannon coined that section of interviews in Nessu and the Blondes because it was Amy, Carla, Marisha, Nicole. And I believe we said on the podcast, well, they're going to be divided into tribes. There's a good chance they're going to be split up. And of course, three of the blondes end up on the same tribe as well. Yeah, exactly.
Demographics matter. Like, this is like the point, you know, like this is the thing, is that you find people who you can relate to, whether it is someone who kind of looks like you, whether it is someone who also lives on a farm. Like, we find, I think, you know, anything we can to just reach out to that person. And that's why it is so important to cast, you know, diverse cast, but also to hopefully have some time to get past those superficial things and make real relationships. Like, hopefully for Charisse, that is something that can happen. I mean, I do want to talk about her stint in Immunity Island as well, because I think we have a lot to say about that and a lot to clarify about that. But before we do, I do want to get through the rest of Zamba, because there was so much going on here. Mike, Rob and I have said pro the Rhaenyra move. Would you agree? Is this something that you think he was doing too much, or you think this was good?
No, I really don't see any cons. The only con I can possibly think of is what you mentioned before of like, well, you leave a couple of outsiders. But I don't know. Maybe I'm going to eat my words here with Dino's fingers. I don't see like a 5-4 vote happening the next time Zamba goes to tribal council.
Well, I mean, yeah, Sean just voted for Keon. So.
Exactly. It's like, because the only thing you could think of is, okay, maybe now you open things up for it to be Sean, Keon, Teresa, Dino, and then they bring in one more person and now they have five. I don't think that's going to happen. I think whether it was due to Rhaenyra or somebody else, you know, that this is still a 7-2 vote. You know, you bring people like Dino, outsiders, quote unquote, in on the vote to make them feel like a part of it. Rob, that's something out of your book of like bringing in people that might be on the outside of the core alliance, but still making them feel like they're part of the core. So I think it makes sense on so many levels. Jason might have provided some strengths in the survival aspects, but didn't necessarily show that due to losing the fire making challenge. You would think he might prove some strengths in the immunity challenges. Didn't prove that either. So I know preseason we said Jason's basically like a lock for the merge, because the type that he is, the Aussies, the Joe Anglums, they usually always almost always make it to the merge because they're such an asset in so many ways. When you're invalidating yourself due to those preconceived notions, there's really no reason to keep you around. And so I think the move made so much sense. I want to speak about it from Anella's perspective. I want to talk about Smash here, because it seemed like the edit seemed to make us believe that he, while it was Rhaenyra's plan, he was sort of like the hinge here, mm-hmm. right? Because he had the relationship with Jason. Rob, you're somebody who formed a really tight duo early on with Nathan. And then when it gets to the point of like, okay, do we keep Nathan or get rid of him? You made the push to keep Nathan. Anella seems to do the opposite here to get rid of, you know, someone who is very close to him. What did you make about Anella's side of things?
Well, look, I think he's going to be an interesting character. He's definitely got some good social skills. He knows how to unite people, the ability to unite people. I mean, he even says it. He's a rugby coach and he knows how to bring a team together. That is crucial. That is a very valuable skill in that environment. And he's actually... He's brazen enough. I remember he was the first one to call out Sean at Tribal Council and actually openly say, this is why you were made a target, and just be open and blunt. And people respect that. That is a show of strength, is a show of power. And I think, yeah, he's definitely going to be a really good player going forward in the game. No question about that.
Yeah, he wins points for me for seemingly being the one to put the alliance together. He loses some points in that alliance didn't last even an episode, but I do think that, like, he's clearly well connected. He gives up his alliance with Jason here, but not in a way that he's blindsided, in a way that he can make that active choice and maybe even get closer to Rhaenyra in doing that. So, yes, they wouldn't have done it without him, I don't think, even if they didn't need him for numbers. And I love that from Rhaenyra as well, as being, like, not, like, just going above his hand and ruining that relationship, even if you can technically get it done. Instead, he does work with him and try and use that to actually strengthen their relationship. And they both really are, you know, they're both really taking into account what the other person thinks. And I think that's a really good quality between allies. So I think this could be a formidable duo between them. Next thing you know, like, one of them will vote the other one out next week with the way the season is going. But I do think that this can be really tight. And I do think for him, the fact that he was so central and his decision really mattered so much, and I don't think they would have done it without him, like, speaks to what everyone thinks about him as an ally. So I think he's in a great spot as well.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued by the Smash nickname. Shane did dozens of hours of preseason content on this, people. Never once did it come up that Anella's nickname is Smash, and now people are calling him Smash.
I know.
I'm intrigued by the nickname in so many levels.
Look, that was confusing for me, because we had Pinty as a nickname, we had Chappies as a nickname, and then Anella's like, but you can call me Smash. I'm like, no. We know everything about you guys. We've done 15 hours of preseason content. There's no way that your name just is Smash. And, you know, like the terrible TV show I watched, which was about the Broadway hit about Marilyn Monroe. I'm sure I would have known if your name was Smash. So I can't really get used to that. And every time they said it, I was confused. But I think, you know, he's doing a lot. He does leave Sean in the dark, which seems like a choice. But I'm like, I don't know what can go wrong with that other than Sean just buries himself, or, like, at worst or best for them, like, erroneously plays an idol. So I thought he was doing a lot really well, and he's pretty much good to go from here on. What about the girls, though? Because I think they're at the center of this. They are three people. Amy seems to be a little bit of a leader in that. Like, who's impressing you of those three girls, Rob?
Okay, well, look, Nicole has it nice. I mean, she looks good. I think she just has to sit there on the beach there and smile, and I don't see anyone voting her out. I'll definitely protect her till the end.
Good to know for your upcoming bachelor season. Maybe we should get her on the cast.
Rob's trying to recruit right now for his own bachelor season.
Yeah, any listeners, Rob's the next bachelor. You heard it here first.
Amy is quite impressive. She called out Kian and Sean. She could see what they were doing, so she's obviously clearly observant. She saw that they were looking for an idol. I don't know. I really don't have too much to say about them, actually. It's just I think they got a lot of screen time, to be honest, especially Nicole.
No, I think it doesn't help that every time we saw them, they were always together.
And so blonde.
Right? Like Anella's making the deal. It's the blonde blob is what it is. Is that Anella's making it the deal with
Marisa?
It's
a cheerleader effect, but it's the blondes.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, I don't know. I feel like actually the strongest position might go to Marisha. And it's odd because I think we talked preseason about the fact that she's not used to lying. She, in fact, said she's a bad liar. But I think between the physical strength aspect and the fact that, you know, they're in a three within a five, it seems like, I think Marisha is probably number one. I know that Amy, I think, is the more vocal, which might also make sense coming from her career. Amy's also someone who said preseason, like, I'm a natural leader. That person might come out, ticked that box. But I think if you're looking at, like, who is the most safe right now on Zomba? I think it's Marisha for a number of reasons. And so kudos to her for maybe coming in, not necessarily evaluating her own skills very well into this game, just the experience of torturing people within her small farm gym. She's in a very, very good position right now.
She's in a good position right now. But what happens is when it starts getting closer to merge, that is the people that they want to start taking out. She's clearly stands out. She's incredibly strong, and you don't want to have those people fighting on you with individual immunity. That's when she then becomes the target.
Yeah, I think Marisha has fallen to a very natural spot for her, like as a mother of girls, to kind of get these two younger girls under her wing. I'm talking like she's a mother to them. She probably is like a few years older than them maximum, but she has fallen to at least like an older sister role for these girls. And I think that that was really natural for her. I don't know if
To clarify, Marisha's 2 years older than Amy, just to put things in context.
Yeah, and as we know, Rob, that means that she doesn't necessarily have like a lot of time with her loved ones left. So hopefully people will keep that in mind.
Are we going back there again?
You knew I had to. You knew I couldn't get through the podcast without doing it. Hopefully people keep that in mind when the loved ones come out, that she doesn't have as much time. But okay, fine. So it's an older sister connection, right? It's not necessarily maternal. I'm so sorry. Because how old is Marisha?
35.
Okay, I'm almost 35, I guess. And Mike is almost 40. So look. It's an older sister connection. It's very natural for her. I'm not 100% sure, as you said, when it gets tricky for her closer to merge, if she has the strategic chops to turn that around. But at the moment, I think she's slotted into something very natural. If she's the safest right now, I was most impressed with Amy. I think Amy's easily the most powerful, clearly the leader. Like she's the connector to the guys. Like she's in those talks the most. And she has her name thrown out, which isn't amazing in the first episode. But she's so well connected that it was such a non-starter, and it actually immediately got Jason voted out. Like, that's how connected she is in the relationships that she has. Like, she didn't even have to do anything, and everyone was like, no, no. And the person who said that went home. So I feel like she must be in a really powerful position.
Yeah, definitely.
Can we talk about the Rice idol clue stuff as well? Because I guess I can sort of lump in with the Keon and more shenanigans, if you will,
because good.
this it just it intrigues me on so many levels because they're looking through the rice bags in front of everybody. We get a camera shot of, you know, in the background, people working on the shelter. They were probably no more than several feet away from them working. And they're trying to say that they were looking for a hidden flint. I'm confused, Rob. Like, do they think were they actually looking for it? Is that just their sort of piss poor excuse for why they were looking through rice bags directly in front of people?
I also don't, for the life of me, understand what they were doing. Now, this is the thing. Let's also look at Dino. When he went and he took the individual immunity, they don't need to do that at that stage of the game. So early in the game, there's something, you know, people are sizing each other up and they're trying to see who they can and cannot trust. The moment you're running around getting individual immunity, digging for idols or looking for idols, you're automatically putting out a signal there that you are not trustworthy. People are like, oh, look at what this person's doing. And I don't understand what they were doing. Literally in front of everyone, Keon and Sean are busy looking for an idol, and then people are just like, oh, look at it right in front of us blatantly. I don't know what they were smoking that day
though. Do you think that was what they got in their reward of all of the things?
No,
that they got
what happened was
illicit substances.
They ate some of that bad fruit, and that bad fruit just started having them tripping out. That's why it was so, they really had to distinguish what's bad fruit and what's good fruit, because the bad fruit can make you make bad decisions.
Yeah, unless I know for a fact that, look, I'm one of the weakest players on this tribe. If there's tribal council, I'll go home. Then, of course, yes, what Dino did made sense. You just want to buy yourself some time, fine. But if you are someone who's, you know, okay, you physically all right, and you can do well in challenges, there's no need to be looking for idols so early in the game, especially in front of everyone, because that destroys your social capital. That's a lot of the reason as to how people started not being able to trust Jacques, because he pulled an idol out of nowhere. And he burned himself, you know, a bit with that move so early in the game. And yeah, there was definitely a mistake on their side.
Look, we'll talk about Dino, because Dino was doing things. But on Keon and Sean, like, I can see for the two of them why they would be nervous. Like, I don't think they were super high necessarily on, like, the draft picks preseason. Oh,
well, they were, maybe, according to Rob.
Yeah. Until they did that. Yeah.
Okay, so they were high enough to look through the rice in front of everyone, but they weren't super high, I think, on everyone's expectations coming in. Keon has some of the difficult demographic stuff that we've spoken about. Sean is a loose cannon that I think all of us were a little bit worried. I know I got him as, like, the last draft pick in a draft that I did, and I love Sean, so I was happy with that. But, like, look, I don't think we're all expecting big things from him, and I can see why they're nervous, but then it becomes, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, are they so isolated because they're looking for idols, or are they looking for idols because they're so isolated, or is it both things? I just think, like, I think that they were looking for a flint. Mostly, yes. Like, they were doing that pure thing. It must have been at least largely pure because it was so public. Like, they're doing it in front of people. They're talking to Amy about it. But they know, like, there is a chance that could be a clue. There is a little bit in it that has that, like, sneaky kind of part of it as well. And that's what everyone's going to latch onto. It's like, even if 95% of you was truly looking for a flint or something that could help the tribe, 5% of you knew this was really sneaky and individual, and that's all anyone's going to care about. So I don't know why you would ever make something like that public, even if you could cling to, we were mostly trying to help the tribe by doing this really sketchy thing, and also we're on drugs.
It's also not helped by the fact that a hidden flint, it's not real.
That's not something that happened.
Yeah, it's like right. if you took a spear and said, all right, I'm going to go out and hunt a unicorn and bring it back to everybody.
It's an imaginary
concept in the game of Survivor. There's never been such a thing as a hidden flint.
It's so true. They were saying it over and over that I started believing it too. It's like, yeah, they're looking for the hidden flint. Like, what hidden flint? There's a clue sometimes, but there's never, like, they're never hiding a flint. I don't know. I mean, Rob, you would know a lot about flints going missing. Like, maybe it was your flint. Maybe a couple of years down the road they found your flint in the rice. That's as likely as would be as production hiding a flint for them in the rice. The only thing they're hiding is nothing or a clue. So yeah, it looks dodgy, but I have to think that it was, like, at least somewhat pure, because then why else? Unless you were on drugs, but let's put that aside. Let's just get that out of there. Why else would you do this in front of everyone? Why would you talk to Amy about it? Why aren't you more guilty for this clearly sneaky thing that you're doing?
No, look, I've been to the South Coast a few times. I know exactly where they are, and there are some marijuana trees there. So
is that why this season is already so wild? Is because everyone's like, oh, we got to eat something. This tree looks good. This, like, what, like, four-pointed leaf. I'm sure it's not too bad if we eat it. And this is going to be the season where everyone is just, like, high out of their mind and making these weird ass decisions. If so, I'm here for it. Let's like feed them more leaves, production. I want to make them search for more hidden flints within bags of rice in front of everybody. But there's also, you know, you talked about Amy's position, but there's also this weird thing, right, where Amy apparently sees a bulge in Sean's pocket. I couldn't tell
that
if
was
that
drugs.
Was her. That might have been, yeah, might have been something that he was packing. Yeah. I wasn't sure if this was Amy sort of like projecting and seeing something that wasn't there, or if this was a tactic from her to be like, let me draw the target onto Sean further. Oh, they're looking for rice. Oh, there's a bulge in Sean's pocket. Clearly, let's put two and two together here.
I assume that it was the former. I assume that because they were doing something so sneaky, your mind starts playing tricks on you and you see things that aren't necessarily there. He did say that he had, like, some sort of leather strap. That's not going to sound good, but that is what he said, that he was,
yeah,
like...
The bulge was real. Yeah, it was the bulge.
The bulge was real, people. We can guarantee that here. I just want to say that back to the fact that we've now coined the Survivor Marijuana Island, the fact that, A, I now understand everything Dino was doing is great for me. And the second part is we brought on one of the best Survivor players of all time, asking what on earth these two players were doing, and all he could say was that he's sure there must be some marijuana trees in the Wild Coast, because that's the only thing that explains it. And you heard that here first. That must be what was happening.
An explanation. Only explanation.
I mean,
this is what we love about Survivor, is when people just do things against their grain, and we
grain.
It will take
certain
understanding.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, it's a great point. Again, like, I have to say how much I love this cast already. This is what I also really loved about Survivor South Africa Philippines, right? It's because in the first episode, you have things like Werner eating clues and, you know, everything going on with Tom and Seamus. Like, we love mess here because it creates so much excitement, and it shows how great this cast is to begin with, because they're all willing to try things immediately, but they're also on to other people. Right, like, we're going to talk about Dino in a second,
yeah,
but Rainier almost ends up, as he says, you know, screwing himself over initially with grabbing this tribe advantage, not coming clean about it when Nico asked for it the first time. And now you have someone like Teresa basically saying, like, well, that's a red flag in my mind that he's able to squirrel this thing away. Now, I think Rainier shows how you can pull a Dino and do something that's individualistic.
Shame, it's been one episode, Mike. How can you coin that already?
He's invented the coin himself, but you're still, you know, you can still utilize social capital to help make up for those misgivings. Like, I could see in a different situation, Rainier end up in a tough position like a Dino, where people immediately say, Well, I don't know, like the fact that he just, you know, put that advantage in his pocket and didn't say anything about it initially. It ends up working out for him because it gets us these comfy sleeping bags, but still, that's not a great look. But Rhaenyra was able to ingratiate himself by making those bonds early on and almost making people forget about that fact. Dino doesn't necessarily help himself when he draws eyes onto himself with the immunity necklace. The eyes go away, they wander, and then he draws the eyes back onto himself by saying, "Everybody, just so you know, I tried to talk to the other tribe in the middle of the challenge to save me."
Yeah, help me, Paul, is just like the saddest cry for help. Because, like, look, we didn't get a lot from Paul. I think Dino misread Paul. And even if Paul wanted to, I don't think Paul could help Dino. A lot of questionable things going on. I feel like Rhaenyra clearly rallied. But I think, like, it said tribal advantage as well. I just think, like, as a super fan, you're so conditioned to that envelope on the beach being and personal advantage for you that you don't give up, that even if it said it in plain letters, like in that moment of pressure, he's just like, no, this is my like secret thing. So unfortunately, it took him a few moments to compute, finally had to do it, and then had to rally from there, which he did really well. Dino goes and gets immunity, and this we'll have to talk about. He goes and he gets the immunity, a surefire selfish decision in a team challenge. There's a reason the other tribe don't do it. It's not that they couldn't find it. It's not that Dino gave Paul a lot of intel by being like, it's there, it's right there, that clear immunity necklace on the giant pole. Like, not really important info to give. Nico has told them that it's there. It's pretty out in the open. The reason that Paul doesn't get it is not because he doesn't have enough time or that he didn't see it. He runs past it because that's a bad look. So I feel like Dino, he goes and gets the immunity. I'm saying, Dino, you of all people, like, you know, you're strong enough, like, you're a fan, you're fine, you're likable. You don't need this for the first tribal council. Like, Santini, Teresa, definitely go get it, but you're okay for now. And then I feel like Dino spent the rest of the episode proving to me that he would, in fact, need it. So, you know what, point for him there, but it shouldn't have gone that way. And I think that was the first step down a very dark path to the point where we're now saying pulling a Dino, and it's been one episode.
Yeah, Rob, what did you make of this marooning thing? I love the decision to put the necklaces like up on that pole out in the open, right? Because that really is...
Hold, hang yourself.
How much do you go for that individual component? If you're on Dino's tribe and you see he grabbed that necklace, like, Are you angry? Are you suspicious? What do you make of that decision he made?
Immediately, he's burned his social capital to the rest of us. He's shown that he's putting himself beyond the tribe. We're all running here, busy getting stuff to help us survive best. And here you are busy running, thinking for yourself. So, I mean, yes, he guaranteed himself safety for that tribal council. But now going forward, he is on a back foot now. It's going to be a bit tougher for him now going forward with that move like that.
It was just so sad because it was so unnecessary, because I just truly think for him it's not something he needed. Like, if he had just done nothing, I feel like I say this way too often. Do nothing and you'll be okay. But like, so they go through with Dino, as I said, he knows. He needs like a Zavion level turnaround at this point, because so he goes for the immunity necklace, the selfish choice in the group. Then he gets back to camp. He's still in the alliance, but he's kind of on the outs of it because I assume because he did that thing and everyone's like, well, you've really called attention to yourself for that. Then they get to the challenge. They're about to lose. He's talking to Paul and the other tribe. This is now 2 out of 2 challenges, tribe challenges, where he has, I guess, talked to the other tribe and done like a self-interested thing. But what was he asking for help for? Like, you are immune. Like, at the time, they know Immunity Island is something that will give them immunity and give them choices. That's it. But he has immunity. Like, what help is he possibly asking for? I thought it was okay that he outed it himself, because I guess I don't leave that in Sean's hands. Like, he's a loose enough cannon, and I just wouldn't want to do that. But also, like, maybe don't talk to the other tribe while you're doing it. I felt for him because I know, like, as a fan, how much pressure he would put on himself and what that moment. I can't even imagine what that would feel like. And I feel like he just was burying himself. And I guess maybe he thought, hey, anyone can win Survivor, you know, like anyone can say they've won Survivor, but how many people can win it from this position? How many people can dig this hole so deep and then maybe dig themselves out one day? And that's something people will talk about. So maybe there's a bigger plan here where he just wanted to just bury himself. And now he wants to us to watch him dig him out of that enormous, enormous hole.
Yeah, I mean, dig up, Dino.
Definitely.
I mean, it's, I don't know. Again, I think what I love about Dino, though, is to the point that you mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast, like, Gino knows he screwed up. And that's the characters that I really love on Survivor 2. We do love our Coach Wades and our Martinez's, right? The people that are high and mighty and big personalities don't necessarily think they are. But you also got to love the characters that are like, yeah, I'm playing a big game, but I'm screwing up at literally every turn. I'm on a racetrack right now and I keep skidding and my car keeps exploding and I'm not learning my lesson. And that's what we're getting from Dino right now. And it is so incredible. I think what I could imagine propelled him along with that immunity necklace thing is, you know, I went out onto the preseason for a Survivor season for Survivor 39. And I asked a lot of people, what is your biggest Survivor fear? And I'd say at least 80% of them said being voted out first. I do think if I could imagine, put myself in Dino's mind, what was front of mind for him was like, okay, I'm guaranteed to not be the first voted out. Let me go for that and then just try to figure my way out later. Like he sees that opportunity in front of him to guarantee he will avoid the embarrassment of being that first boot. And he goes for it. As to why he asked Paul is unrequited love on the other tribe, Paul, who I'm pretty sure doesn't even know who Dino is at this point. We have not heard anything from Paul as to whether or not he knows what Dino's doing or even if he can recognize him from somebody else on the tribe. I think we saw this a bit in Survivor Ghost Island, right? With Jacob Derwin. Jacob Derwin knew he was going to be a first boot and he said, send me there. Thereby, I'm guaranteed not to go first. I have a bit more time, as Rob said. The caveat here is that Dino was automatically safe. The only thing I could think of is that Dino wants to, he knows he's guaranteed to be safe at the first tribal council he goes to. I think Dino might want to try to extend his life in the game, where maybe if he feels, okay, if I go to Immunity Island, I don't go to tribal council. That means when I do go to tribal council, now I have this necklace to protect me. So therefore, it's like giving myself an additional round of immunity. Mm-hmm. That's what I would personally think. We'll get into it later on. That's the only line of reasoning I could think as to why Dino says, I'm already safe, but please make me safer by sending me to Immunity Island.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't see why he would think that would extend his immunity. I think it was pretty clearly like for the first tribal council. And at the time, all they were told about Immunity Island was that it makes you immune. It gives you immunity and then gives you choices. So I would definitely just think I'd be doubling up needlessly on my very damaging immunities. But I do agree. There's definitely like a cut confessional somewhere where they're like, Paul, what do you think about the fact that Dino keeps trying to make a relationship with you? And he's like, hey, who's Dino? Like, I definitely think that that's, like, on the cutting room floor.
Is Dino the host? That guy?
Yeah, I think Dino's doing pretty well as host. Rob, you're the best player of all time. Help Dino right now. Help him D out of the hole. What to do from here?
He's put himself in a bit of a hole, eh? Honestly. The best thing he can do right now is just latch onto a strong player and hope that they can keep him alive long enough. And you know, he actually does say something along the lines of nothing unites people more than a common enemy. So he needs
to
go
and find
a
common enemy.
yeah, exactly. He needs to go put a target on somebody else's back now. Because I think next tribal council, but I think Sean did the job for him there tribal council. So he might be able to just fly under that radar. There. Sean has actually put a bit of a target on himself. So I think he should be okay. He should be okay. I don't see any problems for him like in the foreseeable future, like right now. I think people like Sean are a bit more in trouble than Dino at this stage. But yeah, we'll see with the next episode. But Paul is quite impressive. Physically, he's a machine, that guy. Eh?
I mean, yeah, he said that he like trained for it like a marathon. And so we saw that come out. This is so weird to say, but I completely agree with you that I do not think Dino is in trouble at this moment, which is wild to say, considering, again, everything he did in episode one outside of Jacob Derwin. Like I can't really think of anyone else who wasn't voted out in the first episode who had like such a disastrous first episode.
Xavion, in terms of the first week, does come to mind.
Xavion's a good one as well. But I think, you know, Dino has a little bit. The thing about Dino, again, is he realized his mistakes and he's attempting to make up for it, right? Like we see him deliberately make the choice to say, let me get in specifically with this trio of women. Again, if there's a majority alliance of five or six going on, then if Dino's in with the core group, I think that's going to help him a lot. And you invoked his name before, Rob, but I think there's a lot of Jacques comparisons here where it wasn't episode one, But Jacques made a good amount of mistakes in the first few episodes of your season where, you know, he plays the idol for himself instead of Ting Ting, and his closest ally goes home as a result, and then he loses an idol as well. There's definitely room to maneuver. As you keep saying, Rob, like, time is a big factor here. And I think that with the proper amount of time, I think Jacques also benefited from the fact that, like, a swap was about to happen. If a swap happens pretty soon, that could be a real saving grace for Dino for one reason or another. Either he makes new bonds, or if he's, like, you know, in the small majority on his swap tribe, he can be like, well, you need my vote, so there's no reason to get rid of me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's okay even on this tribe. Like, he's part of the vote. Sean isn't. He's the only one who votes incorrectly. Teresa obviously doesn't vote. Keon votes for Jason. We don't know how that came to be. But Rhaenyra obviously goes to great lengths to make sure Dino is included. They don't need him for numbers, but they really, you know, he goes through the effort of that. And he does have something maybe going with the girls and has identified that they're kind of like a strong little protective force for him who might want to help him out there. But look, difficult one for Dino, difficult first episode, but I love the fact that he's aware of the disaster that was at. My main advice would be to just kind of lay off the stuff that is clearly happening on that island, because that is my strongest recommendation. Did not see the podcast going so much in that direction, but naturally I do have to go with it. I want to talk about Immunity Island itself, because I think we wanted to clarify. The first thing is, we never even said, Mike, like, so We our names, as we said, on the credits, credit us.
Yeah, we're gonna bury the lead an hour into this podcast, and we're like, hey, we were in the credits, but we're gonna wait until about an hour into the podcast to actually bring it up.
Yeah, make people stick around for it. Look, we were in the credits. So Mike and I were production consultants on the season. Before filming began, we don't know anything that happened. We threw out ideas. We worked through mechanisms in the game. And as you can see, anyone watching, this season is a very involved season production-wise. Obviously, with something so complex as Immunity Island, you have games that need advantages and disadvantages. You need choices. There's a lot to it. So we were a part of that. And as such, we can kind of clarify some confusion around Immunity Island. But Mike, yeah, an hour in. Wasn't that a fun thing we did?
I mean, it's incredible. I think for me, a lot of it didn't seem real until A, the episode aired, and B, our name sort of showed up in the credits. And I mean, all the credit in the world to LaRue and Hundry. Yeah, I mean, literally, but to LaRue and Hundry and the Afrikaans team, because to be like so, you know, open and welcome to feedback from the fans. I mean, they've been doing that for the past few seasons, but I know that LaRue talked with us. AJ Mass, of course, great friend of RHAP, was in the credits as well, because we'll talk about diplomatic immunity. That twist was his idea. So I,
yeah, can I just
love,
say, AJ, great twist. How is it not immutiny? Just change two letters around. Immunity.
Listen, I love a pun, but you can't make a twist a name that sounds wrong. Right. If you're like, well, I have my mutiny, people will be like, is there, are you eating too much of those, that five pointed leaf up there in the trees that Zomba's indulging in? What's going on with you? Why are you calling it a mutiny?
It's a great name. I'm sorry. I know I came up with it, but maybe I'm in that production headspace. It should have been a mutiny. It really, like, it just, it's perfect. It's a mutiny. Immunity.
I think we just need a lower third every time you say a mutiny that says, like, this is the name of the twist. It's not immunity pronounced wrong. This is actually what it is. It's a pun. Don't worry about it. In very small text at the bottom of the screen. Yeah. But so LaRue is incredibly receptive to ideas from fans. And so Shannon and I got together with him to, you know, he told us about the concept of Immunity Island, the stay and play versus give up and go. We talked.
Yeah. Can I just say as well, like, it was really weird when Teresa said that on the show, because it was like a phrase I'd heard so many times, and I was like, oh, she's on TV saying it. That is so cool right now.
And it works as, like, you know, a nice little marketing moniker as well. So, like, the branding really works. So we know, we, as Shannon said, but it cannot be said enough, Shannon and I are not spoiled on this season of Survivor South Africa. All the consulting we did was done pre-season. We told LaRue specifically, do not tell us anything about what happens, either from the things that we suggested or what happens to contestants on this season. We've actually made an effort to, I think, forget.
Oh, I don't remember anything.
Things.
I, like, hit my head against the wall a few times. I got nothing. I have no idea.
It's going to be this moment where we're watching something and we're like, oh yeah, we suggested that idea, which is super cool. Again, never thought in my fandom of Survivor that I get to do so many things, let alone this happening. But yeah, so we were consulted a bit about these things. I will say some things changed, I think. So let's also put that out there that if something happens on Immunity Island that you don't like, don't say, Mike and Shannon, you guys screwed up. Why did you make this choice? Thank you, Rob.
But if something happens that you like, that was us. So everything you liked was us, and everything you didn't like, that was LaRue. So I just want to make that very clear.
So all that being said, though, I mean, I don't think we're going to necessarily praise the heck out of Immunity Island, but I think there are a lot of pros and a few cons. One of the pros actually comes from, I think, in comparison to your season, Rob. Something I love about Immunity Island compared to Island of Secrets is that there is going to be a set structure to it every single time. Like, I know that things are going to be a little confusing starting off, which is why we're going to get into some clarifiers here. But this is going to be the hardest time to figure out Immunity Island. Every single time someone goes there, it's going to be stay and play versus give up and go. I like that so much more in comparison, again, no offense, Rob, to Island of Secrets, where every time you went there, it was, okay, maybe you're playing a game of chance.
It was a secret. Maybe
you're just hanging out there. Maybe you get to see Steffi's friends. Like, there, it seemed like there was really no rhyme or reason as to what happened when. This always has a skeleton to it. It's just the organs that are going to be different every time.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because I'm still also trying to figure out myself, what's the difference between Immunity Island and Island of Secrets? It feels like the same thing, you know, just caught with a different name. But I'm glad to when you tell me that, okay, there's actually something to it now that is different to the Island of Secrets.
Yeah, I mean, I think that structure is important, and that's why I did want to take this opportunity to clarify, because I think there's been a lot of confusion around something that I guess was kind of vague, and I'll get your take, Rob, on someone who maybe was a bit more new to it, what you were taking from it. But so to clarify, this is what happened with Tarifa's vote. Every time you stay and play, which is the choice that you'll be given every single time, stay and play or give up and go, you actively trade your vote for immunity. So take away even the competition that Teresa did, whether she'd won, whether it had been a different disadvantage, like, she would never have voted at that tribal council. And I do think that a lot of that was inspired by, in your season, Rob, where Steffi sends herself to Island of Secrets at the Merge, and Rick Devins and I debated at length whether I thought that was terrible, because I was like, how could you give up your vote at the Merge, like, the most important tribal council of the season? Like, that's such a table setting vote, and you've given it up. And I think kind of those conversations, not necessarily that explicit one, but that kind of concept inspired the idea of, like, will you trade your vote and your power and, like, your voice in the game for immunity? And so once you do that, you play a game, you get to see what the game is before, you get to see what you're wagering beforehand, which is something I really like, that transparency. If you want to give up and go, you go back to the conversations, you go back to tribal council, you will vote, you will be part of it, you will be vulnerable, but you will get an immunity necklace that you can, if you choose, give to someone else. So
but you can't hold it. Yeah. That's the difference, is that you can give it to someone else, and that's what the give up sort of, like, reference is. And so I think where the confusion lies, I will admit, I think there was some confusion in the way this was edited initially, is that stay and play, I think you would assume, like the Steffi comparison,
you don't go to tribal. Yeah.
Yeah, you just stay overnight. And that's why, like, there's food there, there's, you know, there's a shelter there. But they had Teresa not only go, but sit in on tribal council, which I think did not help people of, like, oh wait, she stayed and played, but she's still going. The difference is, if you give up and go, you go immediately, and so you're in on the strategizing for that afternoon. If you stay and play, you go to tribal council, but you ostensibly have no idea what happened during the afternoon.
So they probably should have had her, like, on the jury bench, because she, in staying and playing, she became a spectator to that tribal council. She was not involved. She could not be voted for, and she would not vote. And that always happens when you stay and play. I actually thought that she would be actively staying at Immunity Island. So they possibly should have had her a little bit separated, but that's what it is. And then you play a game, and her disadvantage happens to be that she will lose her vote. So that will be next episode. I don't know how public that will become, or if that will be her choice, because I think a lot of people were upset that Nico made her reveal that she had no vote, because you shouldn't be made to reveal your advantages or disadvantages. I mean, Rob, one of your best moves in the game was that you could be secretive about what you had. But I think that I do want production to be transparent about their mechanisms. And that's what Nico was asking. He was asking, can you vote?
She said no, because that's what she gave up for immunity. That's a mechanism in the game that is a structured mechanism that will happen every week that now they're aware of. And I think that's really important. And then we'll see next week what happens with her disadvantage in the game, which might be hers to reveal. And that I think should be to her discretion. So I know there's a lot there, and hopefully we've clarified that for some people, because I think that was a big sticking point about, you know, her vote and her having to tell them that she had no vote. And that's not actually the disadvantage. So Rob, was that what you got from it, or was it confusing to you as well?
Yeah, look, it was slightly confusing. I mean, even the diplomatic immunity.
Immunity.
But I get it now. When I watched it again, it's basically if his tribe loses an immunity challenge, he can then go on to the other tribe, mm-hmm. which basically means she's safe from that vote. However, now he's going to be sitting on a tribe by himself after that. And he's highly likely the next one to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, is I think, especially again, talking with LaRue preseason, he wanted to make sure, especially when it comes to going back to Immunity Island, that the choices were as balanced as possible. Because I think the ability to not vote when you stay and play, I think is a necessary component to it. Because I really do think otherwise you're going to stay and play basically every time,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're like, oh yeah, there's going to be an advantage and I'm immune from tribal council. Let me stay and play. But I think you get into these situations where you're like, oh, if I can't vote at tribal council, my vote might be needed, right? If it's going to be a 5-4 mm-hmm. vote and your vote is necessary. We've seen this a couple times, Shannon, in the US version, right? With like Kellen and Janet in Island of the Idols. There are some people that, faced with the prospect of losing their vote, say, okay, I'm not going to play then because my vote really does mean a lot. And so I think they wanted to balance out the outcomes with both diplomatic immunity and
the mutiny, Mike. Why?
Mutiny.
Why must you taunt me?
Immunity from now on. I'm also going to call it mutiny.
Thank you.
Mutiny. But it's this idea of how you know, if you stay and play, you are safe. But you can vote at tribal council and you miss out on the strategizing going on, versus if you give up and go, you're not safe, at least not safe with an immunity necklace. But
immunity. No, that one actually is immunity. Sorry. Continue.
Thank you. Sorry. It automatically gets triggered for you. But you get to take part in the strategizing and go to tribal council. I know there's been some discussion online. I think this is as balanced mm-hmm. as it possibly could be. I think as long as there are cons to staying and playing, that's going to make sure that it's not just, I know you from a production perspective, you probably want them to stay and play every single time, because otherwise, like, why you create all these challenges? But I think giving them a reason to weigh their decision is necessary when it comes to these types of twists.
Yeah, I mean, I said that I would praise Immunity Island. Like, I think that balance to me is what I like about it. I think that it's very fair. I think your vote for immunity at that tribal council and the time that you lose is a fair choice. Then going into a game that you could win or lose, that obviously has its pros and cons as well. Like, I think that balance I really like. I also really like that this is a season of decisions. Like, even from the first moment mm-hmm. that Dino makes that decision to take the immunity necklace, like, that is something that he chose to do, to do that public decision as well. And I really like that there's going to be so many little decisions for us to analyze, because this is a cast of gamers, this is Survivor South Africa, there's so much time as well, more time, like 10, probably 15 extra minutes than what the US gets. And let's spend that time on giving people strategic situations and decisions that they can make, where it can make or break them. And I think that it is really balanced within that. So hopefully some of that clarity will come through, and obviously we've now spoken about it, but even through the episodes coming through, and there'll be some interesting choices for the cast members to make. Rob, are you, like, yeah. What are your thoughts, like, as someone who had Island of Secrets and mastered Island of Secrets, what is your thought now on that as, like, the package of Immunity Island?
Look, I really like the element of letting the players control the game, or, you know, make decisions.
Yes.
A lot of people think that a production sits there behind the string, behind the scenes, being the puppet master, pulling the strings and, you know, pre-planning all these things and making sure this one gets that. Well, people think that's the case, but it really isn't. And when they leave things to random the way they have done with the season, like, especially with how the tribes were set up, these tribes were set up completely there on the spot. You know, there was no strategy behind it. It wasn't like, okay, let's pair this one with that one. No, it was done at complete random. And I think that's, I love that. That just shows that they're letting the game play itself out. They're not trying to control anything. You know, sometimes, for example, I would think, just on a personal side, when I go to Island of Secrets, I would think that they would give the advantage or whatever, depending on who went. So if they want to help one player, they'll maybe give something better than if another player had gone there. That shows that production could have a hand in things. However, when they make it like this, it shows that they're not interfering in the game. They're letting it play itself out. And I love that. They're letting the players make the decisions. And they are not interfering in the game in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Not to say again that you know, production necessarily did that with Island of Secrets, but I think it's very easy, especially from a player perspective, to think that, right? Of like, oh, if an outsider gets sent, maybe they get a super idol, but then when I go, I get a message from home. I think that just depending on like what that day's thing is, I mean, I talk about this all the time that I think the number one element you need in a twist is choice. And I think to your point, Shannon, like there are so many different decision nodes that can be made to the point where it's a little complicated, which I'm also sort of excited about. You know, when it comes to a lot of twists on Survivor, I know a lot of arguments some people in production make is, well, we can't make it too complicated because then people might not get it. This is pretty complicated.
Yeah.
And so I think
a lot of people didn't get it. So.
Yeah. And so I think, I will fully admit, I do not think, to Rob's point, I do not think it was edited well.
It was confusing in hindsight that the first disadvantage was that she lost her vote, but she was also giving up her vote for immunity, and then she was sitting with everyone. So yeah, like it became unclear in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue in a very strong premiere of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island, the weakest part was Immunity Island. You're going to ruin that word forever.
I ruined the name of the season.
And it's the name of the season, but I think it's just due to things that we didn't necessarily know about. There's a secret scene that explains a bit more. Hopefully we clarified as well. Just to review, so Teresa essentially, in just choosing to stay and play, automatically lost her vote, because that's what you do. You get the immunity necklace, but you can't vote at that tribal council. Additionally, she is now not voting because she lost the game. So at the next tribal council that Zamba goes to, or whatever tribe she's on goes to, she loses her vote. And so the reason why the first one was revealed, why Nico says, Teresa, is there something you want to share with the class? Is because that was due to the element of stay and play. They wanted to make that
mechanism
really, really visual to everyone. And that's another thing that I love is this is something that I talk about all the time with Australian Survivor, Shannon, you know, is it. I hate whenever production purposely, you know, springs twists onto contestants, because you think in the moment it's, oh, then they're going to be scrambling at the last minute and there's whispering going on with this brand new change to the game. But really, and Rob, you can speak to this, the vast majority of the time, the exact opposite happens, where it's like, OK, I don't know what this is, but let's not rock the boat at this moment. I don't need to account for anything new. Let's just stick with the plan. Here, if everyone knows how Immunity Island works, when it's described up top of like what Immunity Island is, that gives people time to make decisions and work out cool strategies. And I'd much rather get that than people flying off the handle, making knee-jerk decisions, or usually the opposite of them saying, cool, new piece of information, I don't know what that is, so let me just not, you know, incorporate it into my decision at all.
No, correct. There's nothing worse than, you think one thing, and all of a sudden this thing happens, and now you're suddenly seeing flames here, and you have to think in a few seconds. I also hate that. So I'm really happy at least it's structured to it now.
I think we were both two very loud voices, Mike, in terms of like transparency is key. So I think that, where a lot of people criticize Nico making what they thought Teresa will give up information on her disadvantage or advantage, which you should really not have to do unless they end up showing like a no vote. Obviously, it could come out based on the votes that just are read in the next tribal council. That's the kind of disadvantage that can be quite apparent based on the fact that you don't actually vote. But the host should never say, like, what do you have in your pocket, unless it is the game mechanism. So where people criticize it, I think we should actually, like, praise the fact that they want people to be on the same page about what this island is and the fact that that was, like, the mechanism, the general mechanism of that. And as I've said, that I really like that it does give some power in the early game to some people who might need it, who might have difficulty in those early stages. And I think compared to something like Ghost Island, which this might be compared to, which is, you know, the I want to play a game level of islands, I think it's going to give fewer outs because we have the structure. It's not going to say no game for you, which became such an out, such an obvious lie you could tell. I don't think it's going to let, you know, we talk about this at Island of Secrets, like you have to choose who to send to Island of Secrets. There was no out, there was no drawing rocks. And I think that's hopefully what's going to be part of the season is like, the decisions made at every single turn. Who are you sending to Immunity Island? What are you choosing? Teresa obviously made the only choice that could have been made for her, you know, in getting immunity in a difficult spot for her. But everyone will have that decision of what they want to do, and every tribe who wins will have that decision of who they want to send, and it'll just be a lot for us to analyze as fans, and we have time to do it. So I am excited about that.
Let me also answer a question that's been going around as to, okay, is it going to be the same every time? Is it always going to be an idle clue? And without saying too much, it will not. That's one of the things that I remember, is that I think one of the things that Shannon and I also talked about was, okay, with this, let's make sure this is not advantage get in, where there's like five idols and three extra votes and two vault nullifiers. So every time they go there. Yeah. So I know this first time we got like an idol clue. I also think it's a very interesting choice to not have any idols appear in this first episode, which feels like such a you know, idols in episode one are such a big textbook part of initial Survivor or modern Survivor, but I love it because it allowed us to get them to know the people more instead of just having them on a wild goose chase. But every time they go there, as I mentioned before, the decision's going to be the same, but the prizes will be different. And I will say they will not always be game advantages. They'll be advantages in the game, but not game advantages, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, what does that mean? Like disadvantages?
Well, there will always be a disadvantage because you always play a game like Teresa did. So you always need like a, disadvantage and an advantage, but they won't always be the standard no vote because that gets really boring. That's what Ghost Island did every time. They won't necessarily always be idle clues. Again, I don't remember. I literally don't. I actively forgot, but I know it will be varied and hopefully there'll be some kind of creative stuff that we can talk about.
Nice.
Like I said, like this is going to be the hardest time for us because since that structure is coming back each episode, this is the time where we really have to get adjusted to it, much like the players. I think now that everything's been established and hopefully more of those rules will be established next episode with the next person that goes, we can get more used to it. It's just right now, it's like trying on a new pair of clothes and like things don't exactly fit in the right way. We're going to tailor some things and everyone will get used to this new pair of clothes.
Yeah, but I do love at its core the vote for immunity decision. I think that that is really cool. Like, as I said, Rick and I debated it. Devons and I debated it when Steffi did it. Steffi was immune. I still don't understand why she sent herself to the Island of Secrets at the merge. I will never ever be on board with it. Much like how Dino wanted to go here and just, I guess, play to lose his vote when he was already immune. Immunity being the main advantage that you get from Immunity Island. But there's a really interesting decision there around your power in voting and being at tribal council and being in conversations versus just being safe, defensive versus offensive. So I do really like that balance. But Rob, I want to go back to what you said about immunity, and I will not call it anything else. Yes. So this is a new twist. It's basically a chosen mutiny where, okay, the tribe loses, you're in such a bad spot that you don't want to go to tribal council because you'll get voted out. So you elect to mutiny, send yourself to the other tribe, and then you're there until the merge or until a swap. I feel like I agree with you. Like, anyone who's doing this has lost Survivor. Like, imagine your game is in such a bad way that you have to put yourself on an entirely new tribe that has existed without you just to not get voted out. Like, hey, next time they go to tribal, you might get voted out anyway.
Yes, and the worst thing is that he lied about it. Chappie's lied about it. He told his tribe that he got nothing other than fire there. When he pulls this thing out, I don't know how he's going to survive that one because he lied.
What would you have done?
Actually, to be honest with you, I didn't think he had a choice. I would have done the same thing. Wouldn't have told him about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting choice because, like, if you would imagine you'd want to tell people about it, maybe you tell, like, your number one about it, right? Like, maybe Chappies tells Pinty, so it's not like, hey, I may screw you over, you know, if I choose to hop over to the other tribe, don't hate me. But I think unless you can weaponize it almost like for the tribe, it's tough to really reveal it. You know, the one thing I wasn't a fan of is that, you know, this came from just participating in the fire challenge. And I think to your point, Shannon, if Immunity Island helps give advantages to those that might not be that advantaged in the game. I think this was an excuse to be like, send your alpha males who can make fire into this challenge, and then they're going to receive a bracelet that allows them to swap tribes at any time. I think we sort of lucked out due to the fact that Jason and Chappies were the two, because A, Jason got voted out immediately, so he shows how he was not necessarily going to be that alpha male protected position. And B, Chappies is just a big old goof. And to your point, Rob, like, probably is actually not in the best position and might actually use it, even if it's not necessarily for his benefit.
See, I actually thought the opposite was really interesting, because I was like, anyone you're sending for fire is like a big bravado guy, like the champion for your tribe. So like, even if they're going like Jason did, it's probably like in a blaze of glory. Like, they're not on the outs like someone like Teresa, who knows that she needs to use it. Like, to me, sending someone for such a niche advantage, which again, your game needs to be in like such dire straits to use, but sending it for, giving it to your champions, I was like, when will they use this? Like, they're either getting like hella blindsided, or like they're going to be insulated and fine because the tribe trusts them enough to do this. So I actually thought it was like, if you're going to give the alpha males and the champions anything, I thought like this thing being like, hey, betray everyone who just sent you to make fire, who just trusted you to do this. You can just completely ditch them. I thought that was like an interesting thing to give them if you're going to give them anything.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? The thing is that if your game is in a position where you feel that you need to use something like that, I mean, you're done already. So
yeah, that's not a winning game.
It's exactly, it's the last kicks of a dying horse. Basically, if you use that, it's the last kicks of a dying horse, because wherever you go, you're gonna get there, and then you're also in trouble anyway.
Mm.
So Rob, your game was linked with fire in so many ways in Island of Secrets. When this tree mail comes and says one person must be sent to represent you in this fire making challenge, would you have stepped up, or is that something that you would try to like give someone else to do, to sort of like we saw with Jason, like, you know, have an opportunity to possibly draw more attention onto yourself?
Yeah, look, no, when it comes to fire in me, I'm very confident, and it's I do it fantastically. I mean, I can do it now without a flint even. I've posted a few of that on Instagram.
You can do what Chappies claimed he did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can do it now. I actually posted a video of it on my Instagram. It's uncut, and you see me make a fire with no flint. It's the bow drill method, and so I've obviously perfected that now. So in future, it won't be a problem with or without flint. However, when it comes to fire, I think they would have naturally seen that, like they do with Chappies. Chappies is the one who took initiative, and he started trying to make a fire without a flint. And I mean, yes, he didn't succeed, but it was commendable. So automatically they said, look, Chappies, go smash this. And I think a similar scenario would have happened in my situation. The tribe would have told me, Rob, please go do it. And I would have been confident enough to go and tackle that one.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, because even if you go as Chappies did and win and you come back for your tribe as a hero, like, there's still doubt on him, not just because he had to make the fire and put himself in that like pressurized situation, but also because you go out to this individual thing. And I thought it was unfortunate for Chappies, as you said, Rob, like, that you just would have kept it a secret. I think that's a tough spot, because like, who are you going to tell? It's this really random advantage. Now you have something that no one else did, because you did like the selfless thing to help the tribe and get fire, and you won. And I think it was unfortunate for him that Mike Claws like over things, correctly so, to know that there's probably something they're getting once they get like two people alone to tie them into this like secret bond that lasted all of the next 20 minutes, but like to give them this thing that the other person knows about that none of their tribe does. I think for Chappies, like for me, what I'm usually in favor of, having had a friend go down to the individual lie in Nikaya Danza, is I say, like, you know, often tell your allies, definitely, as you said, tell like a pinty, try tell a majority in that being your allies. Like someone like Jason maybe could have solidified his six by like the secret of like, hey, I'm probably never going to use this, because it's, again, as you said, last kicks of a dying horse, it's a really difficult one, but I do have this thing and I just want you guys to know, and I'm honest about it. I feel like he could have used it, but I'm just not clear enough on the Vuna dynamics to know if Chappies had that majority of people to tell. So I think it's a tough one to him, and now like my clause is onto him.
I'm intrigued. Do we think a mutiny is transferable?
Thank you. No, why do people keep saying that?
I don't know. There's a lot. Basically every other advantage, maybe besides like the vote steal, you can give away or use on somebody else. Could you just like give that bracelet, like, Pinty, here's some jewelry, use it if you want to. Because again, if you're talking about drawing a target onto yourself, you could do that to somebody else.
But, well, that's true. Like, yeah. That's a good way to vote someone out of your tribe without voting them out. You give them an advantage to do it. Yeah. It's like there's leaving your tribe and then there's kicking someone out of your tribe. No, I think you could give it away in the game. I was just confused because I saw a lot on Twitter being like, but did Jason like bequeath it? I'm like, no, these aren't fire tokens. Like, he's out of the game. And he definitely, like, we saw him in the post game with the bracelet on his wrist. So you can't do that.
I love the bracelet too. I don't know, Rob, you are an incredibly observational guy. If someone comes back to camp and says like, oh, nothing happened, are you noticing like a new bracelet on them?
Not on Jason.
Of course. I don't understand how they're not picking this up. I mean, it's sitting on, they should see this. I mean, in that place, people even make fake idols out of stuff that's from the tree mail stuff, you know? So anything that stands out that's different, that is not, that we didn't find in the ground, we will take notice of it. I mean, where did you get the bracelets all of a sudden?
Surely he put it in his pocket, though. But Chappie's wearing it on his wrist, because I feel like that would be really obvious, because he had nothing on his wrist before.
I mean, Chappie's had nothing on at a certain point in time, but I would not be surprised if, yeah, maybe, I don't know where he had that bracelet on. But
why?
Not any point.
I love Chappie so much.
No, Chappie's is also definitely my favorite. I love how he's playing right now. It's ridiculous. That's next level play.
Yeah.
He's lying constantly, happily playing a physical game, good social game. He's ticking all the boxes for me.
I love when Nico's like, you know, he lies about making fire. Then Nico's like, well, then you don't need fire. He's like, no, we still do, though. As a plan B. Like, it's just the way he was burying himself in that moment was hilarious.
Well, I Chappie's, again, he sort of is like Sean in that regard, in that, I don't know, maybe you felt this way, Shannon. I did not get the concept preseason that Chappie's would be as tongue-in-cheek as he is on the show. Like, he is, like, he has that high and mighty attitude, right? His first confessional is like, you're already looking at the winner of Survivor South Africa season 8. You're just watching my journey. Mm-hmm. But, like, he knows he's in on the joke, right? Like, I love that confessional, like you're mentioning, that moment when he says, yeah, you know, I lied to Jason. And he kind of called me out on it, but like deep down inside, I know he was shaking in his boots, mm-hmm. or the boots that he didn't wear because he had bare feet. So Chappie's is just such a fun character. I think I did not expect him to be as fun of a character as he ended up being.
I think I did, just because he was fun on social media and he was having a laugh with it. Like, I could tell he had that lighter side to him, even though he came in and said, Rob, I don't know if you heard his preseason interview, but he said a few things. He said he was going to play like a game like yours, best game ever, like Tony, all of these people. He also said, he asked him what Survivor character he's most like. He said he would be you and Nicole's biological child, as adopted and raised by Jacques. Now, where do you sit in this? Would you give your child to Jacques? Are you on board with the fact that Chappie's is your biological son? Are you condoning his behavior?
You know, when it comes to Chappie's, I can't say too much about it, but I have a lot of faith in him. I have a lot of faith in him. I expect big things from that guy.
You're a proud father.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. I'll happily adopt him. He's my son.
No, you're the biological father. Jacques is adopting him. He couldn't have been clearer that you were his biological dad. I don't see the resemblance. That's just me.
And how must I give my child to Jacques, though? That makes no sense.
I don't know.
Did you just leave baby Chappie's on Jacques' doorstep and say, like, you know what to do?
I think Jacques would kill my child at this stage. So any of my old friends away from Jacques.
Yeah, Jacques is giving him the immunity, being like, sending him out. Hey, I've given you this advantage. Goodbye. Yeah, so that's what Chappie is. He's trying to live up to your game, Rob. If he gives us anything less than that, we were going to call him out on it, because that's the shot that he called. We're over an hour and a half into this podcast, and we have not spoken about Vuna and the dynamics there. For me, I don't have a strong sense of where the power lies. It was just a lot of, like, vague relationships. I'll read out what we got. We've got Pintin Chappie's, as we discussed, and they've brought in Anesu. We've got Kieran, Anesu, Carla, and Mike Claus together. Kieran and Anesu know each other from uni. Kieran bonded with Tyson. We've got Anesu and Warda through yoga, and they brought in Carla. And we've got Tyson and Warda, and they spoke to Anesu about this. So the only people not mentioned in that are Santini and Paul. But where did you sit, Rob, with all of these connections we saw just coming in thick and fast? And the fact that Anesu knows everyone on her tribe. We've had people know one person. Yeah. You even had that on your tribe. But Anesu, two people on her tribe.
Knows personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, Santoni, I think it's going to take a while for her to get comfortable. I mean, look, let's put it like this. If they'd gone to tribal council, I think she would have been on the chopping block in that tribe, definitely. But Anesu is definitely linked with everyone. It's incredible. She's clearly the center of some web going on there. But it's also, again, I can testify to her energy. I can feel it and just see it off screen. You can see she's got a really warm personality. People gravitate towards her. She's like the fire. She just sits there. She's the fire, and the moths come to her. Because of the energy she's releasing, thanks to all that yoga and things like that. So yeah, I think she's in a good position.
Yeah, can you talk about this idea, to Shannon's point, about pre-existing relationships? Because as she alluded to before, you had one in your tribe from the get-go, right, with Nicole and Leanne. And Nicole was very upfront about, I know that Leanne trusts me, but like, we need to get rid of her. Here we have Anesu, and I think unlike last season, I wouldn't say that, you know, it was purposely Nicole and Leanne were cast together. But in this case, it seems like completely coincidental that Werda and Anesu knew each other from the yoga circles. Anesu and Kieran went to the same university, it seems. But can you speak to pre-existing relationships? Do they help or hurt you more in the game of Survivor, in your opinion?
I think they hurt, to be really honest with you, because even if it's not your relationship, like, say, let's put this for example. I remember Nate and Steffi. They are related somehow.
What?
They have family.
What?
Wait, no, we're not just bluffing about that. Is he her biological dad? What?
No. Nate and Steffi are related somehow via marriage. Like, they're family. They know each other via family.
International Survivor is a lot. Everyone knows
either that or just, Rob, you ended up on this tribe of like everyone who knew each other except for you and Paul.
And then all of a sudden you hear this, and then it makes you wonder, like, oh wait, you know, like, clearly then they tight, and you know, when push comes to shove, they will take me out. Like, that's a bond that I can't beat. You ask yourself, how strong is this bond? Because obviously it's something pre the game, so then they can obviously trust each other more, etc. I mean, even Sipe and Nicole knew each other.
No, Rob, yeah. No.
Yes, Saula really was the tribe of like Rob and a bunch of people.
Who's Sanuya? Am I right?
Anyone else? And I'm the only one sitting there twiddling my thumbs, and I don't know any of you guys because I'm from KZN. So, but yes, Sipe is best friends with Nicole's stepmom.
Like, what? Basically. What? No. Yes. No.
She said she knew exactly who Nicole is.
But there's been like two people in U.S. Survivor history who knew each other. Then there was New Zealand Survivor. It can't be true that your entire tribe knew each other except you.
All of them knew each other. I think it was just Paul and I who didn't have any connection with anyone there.
I don't know how to do that information.
I don't know. I mean, to that point, though, I mean, I think you both can speak to this obviously much more than I can. Like, is South Africa just that small of a community?
No, I mean, there's 60 million people. I mean, I do kind of know Amy, but that's not what this is about.
See?
No. They shouldn't all know each other.
I know some of these pathways as well, personally.
But I mean, maybe the Survivor community is small, but no, like, there's 60 million people. How much? South Africa's like 60 million people, right?
Great.
Yeah, that's too many for a whole tribe of people to be connected on a 7-person tribe. And Anesu to know two people, like, I thought it was funny that Anesu was the one person preseason who was like, I'm going to lie about being a doctor. And we were like, I don't think you should do that. Two people know that she's a doctor. So that, and now she wants to lie about the yoga thing. I'm like, Anesu, just play it straight, all right? So maybe it's not that crazy as I was thinking, Rob, if all of Saula know each other.
Yeah, it was incredible. But I do know Keon. She was actually at the finale last season.
Yeah, and I feel like Dino is at like every one of these events. And even I think that Jason was saying in his exit that like he knows Dino from the community. Like, I would expect Dino and Rania to kind of know each other. Like, the same way if I were to go on Survivor with like an Australian super fan, I might just know them from Twitter.
Yeah, but that's another thing. Like, this is how the random draw, they said, we're leaving it in the hands of Survivor gods, and the Survivor gods end up having a pretty good draw for Anesu. Yeah. But even outside of those connections, like, as she mentioned, she finds herself in the center of basically all those alliances that you mentioned, Shannon, to the point where even if we have duos like Chappies and Pinty, Anesu's still a part of that. And I think that speaks a lot to her skills. Rob, I'm sure you can speak to how like first impressions really count in Survivor. Anesu's giving out such a great first impression. I think where I worry is if this tribe goes to tribal council, are these factions going to want to agree on the same target? You know, like let's exactly like Anesu is close with Kieran and Werda, for example, but do they want to work together?
I think they can all agree on Santini at first.
That's true. But it might come to a point where, like, if push comes to shove, much like we saw in this episode, right? Rainier said, well, it's going to come down to whether Anella is closer with me or with Jason. And if Anesu has to pick, you know, between those two at a certain point, it might get a bit hairy. But I think in the short term right now, she is golden.
I know why you're saying that, Mike. And I did have a bit of housekeeping I wanted to get to before we get to the chizzy. And look, preseason, Mike said, I don't want to give a winner pick. I want to do the cowardly thing and let fate decide. And whoever touches the immunity idol first will be my winner pick. Now, Anesu and Carla touched it like at the same time, but there was a photo finish and it has been confirmed. The Rue went to the tape. You really had to get a lot of people involved on this, Mike, like a lot of effort for your non-winner pick. Anesu did touch it first. And actually, I said, Mike, that doesn't count as a winner pick. I'm just going to put my pen down on a name. And you actually got Anesu.
There we go. The system works.
Yeah, that is like this pen that I'm holding right now is like predictive, which is pretty cool. If Anesu wins, I absolutely will not credit you, much like the show credited us. It won't be like that. That doesn't count. You didn't name a winner pick, but you have. He didn't, Rob. He didn't name a winner pick. All I asked
left
him was
it
to
up
give,
to fate. No. Listen, if you're discrediting me, you're discrediting the way they started the game by drawing random.
I do discredit that. Like, I don't really like doing that. I would rather production put people into like structured ways. I don't like randomness. I don't like mess. And I don't like how you chose your winner pick.
Well, then if you don't like randomness and you don't like mess, then yeah, it makes sense why you didn't like the method that I picked it. Yeah, it was so much fun. I loved watching that immunity challenge. I mean, first off, that idol looks so badass. I love, it's a simple theming, but I love the skulls and snakes. I love the Death Eater realness that is Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. And the idol looks amazing. So I was like, great. I can't wait to see who touches it. Carla and Anesu. Yeah, exactly. They were both the puzzle people. And the funny thing, Shannon, is again, going back to that podcast we did with Puya and Liana, not only did you randomly pick Anesu for me, but then you also said, oh yeah, my other winner pick was Carla if it wasn't Kieran. So I would have wound up with either your secondary winner pick or the one that you randomly chose for me.
Yeah, funny, maddening, all words to describe what you've done here. Really just so irritating. But Anesu is your official winner pick. And also, how unfair is that? Like, you knew you were going to get someone who was in the first boot, who won the first immunity challenge. Like, that's not episode one winner pick, but it's not a preseason winner pick. So many issues with what you did. Let's talk about more of what happened in this episode, some other housekeeping, the rain jackets. Now, I'm interested to get your opinion, Rob, because I don't care about this. I truly don't care, but I know that if anyone's going to care, it is past contestants being like, hey, we walked uphill both ways to tribal council. Like, why are they wearing rain jackets? Like, what was your take on this?
Look, so Nicole actually was the first one to make a noise about this. We also did a little interview with Sandton Times after that. It was like straight afterwards. As soon as the episode ended, we were on. So you didn't even have time to really digest everything you've seen. But one of the things Nicole also just pointed out very quick, like, these people are all wearing proper rain jackets. Like, they kitted out for the rain. And we weren't, really. I mean, we won two rain jackets, and we gave those to Nicole and Steffi. They were wearing them. And the rest of us just had to suffer. We weren't really dressed for that sort of environment.
Rob, you were in that tank top for the entire game of Survivor.
Imagine, yes. And the jersey I did have was wool. So that the moment you got wet.
Why did you pack wool?
I got given that one. Wool. That wasn't even mine.
I was going to be like, that was your worst move in the game.
Look, this is how at least I understand Survivor, is that it must at least look like, you know, we have survived a wreck. Like, maybe we were on a airplane and it went down. So we must be dressed in normal clothing. We're not dressed, kitted out, ready for the actual outdoors the way they are. They all wearing full-on survival gear, proper rain thing. For me, I imagine it like maybe a shipwreck's down, shipwrecks. And that's what people, they'll be wearing their day-to-day clothing. And that, I think, looks nice. I think these people are dressed like proper
Bear Grylls swag out here. And I'm like, okay, that's quite nice, guys.
They do like Bear Grylls. I mean, like, yeah, for me, like, it's not something I care about. Because for me, as someone who hasn't played, I'm like, it looks really hard anyway. So, the survival thing's never been a huge thing for me. Like, I know that they're definitely less comfortable than I am on my couch, and that's, like, enough for me. Especially with Immunity Island being so involved. Like, I don't want these players to die. I want them to be able to, like, play and handle these, like, difficult strategic curveballs. But I do think it's important to note, like, I know what you went through was hard. I know there have been really difficult climates that people have played in, but we have never played in South Africa in a different location on the Wild Coast. Apparently, it was, like, a medical issue, possibly how cold it was. And I do think we have to remember that, like, not all climates are the same. Not all players are made to wear the same thing. And Jessica Leaf had a great tweet about how sometimes the women can be put into, like, less than ideal outfits, and that can hinder them. So I think kind of putting, like, some sort of objective thing on it where they do get at least this one thing that's going to keep them medically safe, like a rain jacket, doesn't matter to me. Keon's rain jacket is baller. It's cooler than anything I saw at Fashion Week last week. So... for me, no problem. Mike, do you have an issue with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think while the survival aspects are such a big part of early seasons of US Survivor, it's not necessarily something I'm completely tuned into. You know, I recently watched Survivor the Australian Outback, and it wasn't exactly fun to watch people suffer so much. So from a viewer perspective, I'm fine with it, just because, like, I'd rather not watch them be completely depleted. Because that probably means they won't have, you know, be playing as you know, wildly on the Wild Coast. But I can also understand from Rob's perspective, right? Like, Rob, yeah. I think you are now an official alum of Survivor South Africa because you said the next season didn't have it as hard as we did. So I just welcome in that regard.
You know that, like, I think it's standard. I mean, even the guys from season six, you know, like, oh, we had it hard. And then we obviously, like, we had it hard. And it's the same cycle. It all gone and on forever.
Yeah.
Did you have any thoughts, Rob, about filming on the Wild Coast, especially, like, as a South African, the idea of, you know, it still looked like a tropical lush environment, but you have someone like Mike saying, oh yeah, I know the Wild Coast. This is what it's going to be like. So it brings, like, a new fun aspect to it.
Yeah, look, it's definitely very different, at least psychologically, you know, when you whisked away to this island on the other side of the world. I mean, we're literally 12-hour time zones away. We're literally on the other side of the world. So that on its own brings a whole different dynamic. You're very far. And we were really far away from everything. I mean, to put it in perspective, I know exactly where they are. The hotel was a couple of hundred meters away from them, the casino and hotel.
What, yes, is that Wild Coast off. Sun?
Wild Coast Sun, correct.
Yeah, that's the sponsor of the show.
I actually believe that from where they are, they should at night be able to hear the cars passing.
All right, that will take you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So it's psychologically, I mean, in their situation, honestly, I think I'd be sneaking up at night to try and go steal some food from the casino. So I'm like, oh, genuinely, they are that close. I would have taken that chance had it been me. But look, at the end of the day, I don't think it really affects gameplay that much. It's just psychologically, you don't feel marooned. You don't feel as stranded as you would be had they been, for example, in Samoa, where they really are on an island. But I think, yeah, it still looks fantastic. I mean, the production quality is phenomenal. They shot it beautifully. You can't see exactly where they are in that thing.
Can we talk about, speaking of the Wild Coast aspect, the shelter too? Because I asked Jason about this, but I know I was at least a little taken back when I see the temporary shelter that Zomba builds on night one, and it looks to be, what, 2 feet off the ground? It's like they're sleeping under a bed. Rob, obviously you had experiences with many shelters on Survivor. Like, is this a strategy I just didn't know about?
No, I also don't understand what kind of shelter that was, but I mean, each to their own. That's how they make their shelter. Nothing I can say about it.
Look, we have to talk about Jason, because coming out after this recap, we have Jason's exit interview, which Mike recorded. I was listening to it earlier today while eating soup. Literally choked on my soup. It is good stuff. It includes the words, "Are you just holding a pigeon right now?" from Mike, and that's what made me choke. But another thing that Jason so kindly gave us, the opportunity to name one of his prize pigeons. So, Mike, what are we doing with this? Because I had one thing that came to mind. I texted you, I said, please can we name the pigeon my claws? That has to be it, right? Like, I Googled if pigeons have claws, and Google vaguely said yes.
Yeah, they technically have talons, but that could work. The only other one, The only one that I suggested that was maybe more Jason specific was Flint, because due to the fire making challenge, that's as well as the quote unquote hidden Flint in the bag. So
I why don't we call it Surf Boot? That'll be nice for him. Let's just bring up all those. No, like, why would we call it something traumatizing for him?
Why would we call it after a contestant that's not him?
Because I said Mike Claus is an incredible name for a cat. If you're going to have a cat, name it Mike Claus. And I'm not getting a cat anytime soon, but I was given the opportunity to name a pigeon, and I would like to name it Mike Claus.
Okay, I'm fine with that. If you feel like Flint is so traumatizing of a name, I thought it was cute and a little tongue-in-cheek, like Chappies, but now I'm left bare-ass naked by you shaming me for that name, so I'm fine calling it Mike Claus the Pigeon.
Rob, what would you name a pigeon if you were given the opportunity to name someone's prize pigeon?
I need to think about that.
Okay, what would you choose between Flint and Mike Claus? Now, again, Mike Claus, the name of Mike on the season, but also it would be my and then Claus because pigeons have claws. You like that one?
I think it's quite a dope one. I get it now. Yeah, I'll go with that. My claws.
It would really be full circle for us to name a pigeon My Claws. But in the first week of this season, like, what a journey it's been. So that was the main thing that I wanted to talk about. Should we get to the chizzy after everything? Should we finally, because, you know, Rob, you're going to have to pass the baton, not just of a Survivor winner at some point, but of the latest Survivor South Africa chizzy winner. Technically, we did do champions in the meanwhile, so it was taken from you, but this would be the next live chizzy winner.
Chronologically speaking, you are the next. Graham earned it sort of like in retrospect, but mm-hmm. you are the current holder of the title.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to go into it.
Yes, let's do it. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, Mike, I know you wanted to go first more. Take it away with your chizzy points.
Oh, my God. This is great.
What? You did it in Champions 2. Don't act like this is the first time.
No, that didn't remember chronologically. This is the newest time we've done it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, oh man, so much power. I love it. I didn't get power to name the pigeon, so now I have power. I mean, look, we talked about this 2 hours
ago.
Pigeon
name was bad. That's why.
Flint is a great name, okay?
I love it. You came up with Mike Claus. Of course we're going to name the pigeon Mike Claus. How is there any other option?
Anyway. Yeah, I guess I win either way, right? Unlike my winner pick, I actually. Oh no! You know, the first person who touches the pigeon.
Please. I actually want to be able to work with you in the future.
All right. So it seems like a lifetime ago, but I got to give 3 points to Rainier. He really just did a great job. And whereas maybe the other super fans in his archetype, like a Dino or even a Jason, might have fallen a bit, I think that Rainier was able to like really plant roots, make some really solid alliances to the point where, you know, when the girls are talking, he's being included on that as well, even over people like Anella and Jason. Like, it seems like he's incredibly well connected with everyone. And look, I'm sure this may not be the case, but at least from the edited perspective, which is what we have to go off of, he seemed to be the one to really engineer the Jason blindside that truly was a blindside. Jason told me he did not see it coming whatsoever. Somehow, like, Rainier's quiet yet loud strategizing ended up playing out here. And we talked about how I think he made the right decision. Really strong way to start off the game. I'm going to give 2 to Inesu. I know that, again, things have not really been tested, but I think you can't really find someone else besides Rainier who's in as good of a position as Inesu is right now. Like, within the first 3 days, when you're listening out all these different voting blocks and you were involved in every single one of them, that is incredibly good in Survivor. Best case scenario, she doesn't go to trouble for a while, so she doesn't have to test those bonds and make a decision. But right now, she is so socially integrated that it's really going to turn out well for her. And I'm going to give my final point here to Anella. I know that it was, you know, maybe he begrudgingly voted out Jason, but I still think he's well ingratiated in the tribe as well. It seemed like he was connecting with people even outside of like Jason and Rainier. To Rob's point, I think he just seems like a really solid person. And it seemed like from the edited perspective, he was someone who was in that not swing vote position, but sort of like the decider role before going into tribal council. And I think that lends a lot of credence. So that's my first 3-2-1 of the season.
What about you, Rob?
Okay, nice. No, really all valid points there, actually. But on my one, I want to go give my 3 points to who I believe will take this home. After analyzing everyone when it comes to physically, socially, how they play in the game, I see Chappies as my number one.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The first three. He takes my three. I think he the fact that he came on the game and tried to make fire shows that he's playing the game as a survivor. He's actually going out there and trying to actually show some skills. And then he still takes it. He goes and wins for his tribe. He brings that home. He's got a good alliance. I mean, he's deep in there with Inesu as well. They're getting along very well. So I know that he's got access to a good network. And he's not afraid to lie. He's not afraid to just, you know, really get his hands dirty, which I think will serve him really well going forward if he just doesn't overdo it. I mean, if they cotton onto that too soon, it will destroy social capital and then make life hard for him going forward. But I like how he's playing. I think he's a really nice character. So yeah, I'll give my first three to him. And then, yes, my next two has to go to Rainier. I credit him solely for that blind side. It was his conversation with Jason that actually took Jason home. It was his decision. He is the one that spearheaded that entire blind side, and to do it so well so early in the game, especially after his little stuff up there with the advantage that he was hiding. I must give him credit to that. He bounced back very well. That's definitely good gameplay on his side. I think he's in a good position going forward. And then my last one, Inesu, definitely. I think she is in a beautiful position, just the way she's playing her energy. She's keeping it calm. She's not overexerting her power at this stage because she clearly has a lot of it in that tribe, whether people know it or not. But she's taking it easy. She's playing exactly how I'd play in her shoes right now. So, yeah, she takes my last point.
And just to clarify the math on this, because we have a guess, which we do, I guess, every week, we're not actually giving 3-2-1 points anymore. It's actually a 2-1-1 because it gets reduced for the three of us. So sorry for like the merch and the theme song, but it's not as much that and like all of
the... So the number three will never be heard on the Chizzy ever again in this season.
I mean, unless you do a podcast, just us two. But yeah, if it's three guests, you've always done 2-1-1. So...
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know that.
No, well, I mean, Mike said 3-2-1 as well, because I've even put my points as 3-2-1 because that is what it is to me. It's unfair for our two-pointers that they just get reduced to the same as third place. But I don't know. I think we went
through
this 2 years ago.
What about 2, 1.5, and 1?
Mike, what is your ideas today? Why is you wanted to call a pigeon Flint?
I think he's smoking the same stuff he's smoking on the
no,
game.
No, listen, I'm just reaching out to my local tree and just chewing on whatever I get in my hands.
Yeah, so... So it is a bit unfair to the second places, but that is where we're at with this. We had this 2 years ago. It was a crisis of conscience then, and this is what we decided when we started putting guests into things where we did the Chizzy and had three people. This is what we came up with. So I'm going to give my 3/technically 2 points to Rainier. Talked about it. I'm in on the move. I think that if you're uncomfortable with someone, you take matters into your own hands. And while that might be really tricky for a different archetype, we talked about it with someone like a Graham. This is a time where you can do that. If you're like a big, strong guy like Rainier, you can have that presence early and not be afraid that it might come back on you so strong when it's the right move, when it's a good move, and when you're reading your allies well. That's something that they want to do. You obviously brought Dino in as well. Keon somehow was brought in. So it was executed well. And I think tribe unity could be a thing a little bit going forward, maybe with some people on the outs. I'm going to give 2 points, unfortunately 1 point to Amy. As I've said, her name was thrown out there, but the fact that it was just such an all-star.
Oh, it's just because you know her, Shannon.
I mean, I guess we're like both Jews, but like, that's not what this is about. It's not the nepotism. No, I thought she did really, really well. I think she's clearly powerfully connected. She's a central figure. And the fact that if someone even utters your name and then they end up going home, you must be powerful. So I'm giving her a point, but she's my second placer. And then my last point will go to Anella. He lost an ally, but the fact that he could have that choice, the fact that he is so well connected, the fact that he made the alliance and is building something with Rainier where there really are just very understanding of each other and not going over each other's head with anything that they might want more, I think is approaching it really well. So those are my points. I thought it was a bit hard for me to award anyone from Vuna. I just don't have any real sense of the power. Like, yes, Inesu is doing well. Chappie is, I thought, unenviable position to go and make the fire, then get doubted. But like, you're doing the selfless thing for your team and they trust you. Like, good things there, but I just need to see how it plays out with pen to parchment before I start crediting those relationships. But by doing the math, reducing it down in our 2-1-1s, Rainier is our winner with 5 points this week, 2 for Chappies at the moment, 2 for Inesu, 2 for Nella, and 1 for Amy. That is where we're at. Now, our next segment is something we haven't done for far too long, for almost 2 years. To clarify for any new listeners, what is this? Well, there used to be a sponsor on the show called Biostrath. Not anymore.
Oh, no, it's gone.
No, it's so upsetting. We'll talk about maybe why it's gone in this segment. It's called the Biostrath Variety Hour. It's where we check in with the sponsors. It's called that because I remember I went about the sponsors for ages on one podcast, and Mike was like, what is this, yeah, Biostrath Variety Hour? Anyway, take it away, Jacob Sager-Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues. This is our new theme song, updated for 2021. It's the Biostrath Variety Hour.
And now, it's the Biostrath Variety Hour with your hosts, Shannon Goss.
I don't know what I was expecting.
And Mike Bloom. Biostrath is delicious.
Oh, my God.
Oh, why was it so thick?
One.
So that is our new theme song that has audio of us trying Biostrath. And if you, any of you were asking, hey, what happened to Biostrath? Why aren't they a sponsor anymore? I'm thinking maybe a couple of idiots got a hold of some Biostrath for a show that they're paying to be a part of, tasted it, had that reaction, and Biostrath did not renew their contract. I don't want to put that on us, Mike, but I'm genuinely concerned.
No, this is like the credits thing, right? Like, you only can credit us when we get sponsors onto the show. Please do not credit us for when they lose sponsors.
Yeah.
So is this now like, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that we still call it the Biostrath Variety Hour, right? Because Shannon, the Chizzy points are named after Matt Chisholm, which is no, the host of a Survivor franchise that no longer exists.
God.
I think it makes sense that, like, you know, we keep naming things after things
that
no longer complete in Survivor.
Mike, my segments are cursed. Oh my God, I curse Biostrath and I curse Matt Chisholm and I curse Survivor New Zealand. Oh my God. Oh my God. I feel so bad right now because it's so obvious because it's right in front of me that I curse all these kind people.
Well, we should also mention that Biostrath is unfortunately not the only sponsor that we lost. Rob, we have lost your beloved Steers as well in the transition between season 7 and 8.
Yeah, it wasn't on the slide at the end. And I feel like, look, while Biostrath, that may be on us, but I feel we could not have even more positive representation to Steers.
For Steers, yes. I mean, I did my best there with them as well. I mean, I was eating that meat there more than anything. Like, I was representing.
Doing the Lord's work.
What about Mahindra? Are they still
okay,
there?
Okay, so I've gone through and there's a bunch of new sponsors and there's some old sponsors and there's some old sponsors. Okay, we're at the Biostrath Variety Hour. So yes, I've gone and done the stalking, found their social media. Here's where we stand with the sponsors. Mahindra, still there. Cape Union Mart, still there. OutSurance.
For Rob's sake, he's very happy about that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Cape Union Mart, you're a face of that. OutSurance, back from season 5. Now, Mike and I recently rewatched Champions, but that is a long time ago for them to come back, like through a reboot. So that's good, at least. You think that was us? You think that was the Champions? I mean, I know they recorded this before we did our podcast. Maybe that was us?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we put the idea out there. Yeah, OutSurance is, for people who might not know, but you don't know by the title, an insurance company. So I'll be intrigued. Yeah, I'll be intrigued to see, though, because I know that in Champions, they did, like, they really shoehorned the moment in, right? Of like, you know, you always want insurance of a loved one. So here's your mom's. Come on out. I will be very intrigued to see how they're able to incorporate an insurance company into Survivor South Africa.
They did it once. I'm sure they can do it again. So Cape Union Mart live tweeted. They had my favorite of the sponsor live tweetings. They tweeted Hustle Jason. Then they replied to themselves saying, lol, Jason the Hustler, laugh crying emoji. Then later they said, there goes Jason the Hustler with a clapping gif. And I just want someone to explain this to me. Like, is this a joke I'm not getting? Did he say Hustler? Why are they making fun of him?
Good question. Rob, you're the Cape Union Mart guy. Speak for them.
Are you tweeting for them?
I'm going to give them a phone call. They're good friends of mine. I'm going to find out what was cutting with their tweet. I didn't see it. But no, without insurance, guys, you always get something out.
Yes.
So, yes. You know,
I've heard that.
Like, even if voted out, you always get something out.
Right. You know? Are you also a spokesperson for altruism?
No, I'm not. I just came up with that one right now, literally.
There we go.
Been voted out. Yeah, they should actually play with that one a bit.
I will say altruism did not live tweet. Mahindra did live tweet with a lot of just eye emojis and hashtag always up for a challenge. That's back. But it was I do the eye emoji sometimes too, but it was like a lot of eye emojis. That's what we've already had. The new sponsors. Now, Rob, you're here, one of the best Survivor players of all time. We've actually gotten you here as a South African. You can tell us what these brands are, and that's why we need your expert opinion. Now, as I said, the Wild Coast Sun, which, as Rob said, that's where they could be stealing from the casino. That is a sponsor. Fun fact, my parents honeymooned at this resort. Now you know. Yeah.
Wow.
South Africa maybe is really small.
No, it's a beautiful location. It's not that small, Shannon. It's just that there's limited places we can go, and Wild Coast Sun is definitely one of the best options, yeah.
So are you a spokesperson for them too?
No, not yet, but you know, I'm trying to hustle.
Listen, no, Rob, don't affiliate with us. We apparently curse sponsors. We do the opposite here. So do you think, is that where Ponderosa is going to be, you think? Is that the Wild Coast Sun?
100% definitely. I'm sure that at that time, because obviously this was in quite a hectic lockdown. Mm. They started just before we got into a harder lockdown, I think. And so at that time, I'm sure the hotel must have been pretty empty. So it was a perfect location for the crew to stay at. So, I mean, yeah, very smart for them to use that location. And it was just very beautiful because it's an ocean that has like it's connected to a nice lake and stuff. River that runs out to the ocean. So it's an ideal location.
Oh my God, really, Rob. I'm sure they'll call you. Like, you know, the way everyone's so thick. That's not what we do here. Here we taste fire stress. We choke on it. We go on for a long time about it. We get it out of the show.
Oh, I listened to that one laughing because I know the taste you guys went through, because I remember myself as well when I was on the island and then they gave me ice strength to drink, and then obviously the cameras are on now. And I mean, I'm not saying this stuff tastes bad, but
no, it tastes bad.
It just doesn't taste bad.
It's not a sponsor anymore. We can say what we want.
Yeah, exactly. We can be honest.
In my face. It's not a taste that you expect, obviously.
Yeah, no, so, it's surprising. That's what I would say. And I just think, like, why? With this type of conversation, with a segment named after it, why would they pull their sponsorship from the show? I just don't understand. Ooh.
Should Biostrat brand itself a blind side in a glass, and that it just really takes you by surprise?
Yeah, that's good. All right. So they also have Techni Block. Beat the Sun. It's a sunscreen. I feel this was not well represented given Chappie's and Sean's horrendous, horrendous sunburns.
And we do get sunblock on the island. They give us two.
Right. Can't be too sunblock.
We get sunblock and mosquito repellent. Those are the two things that they give us behind the scenes.
Good.
That's all we get.
Do we want people to just be destroyed by the sun? I mean, it didn't look like Chappie's had applied. It looked like it was his own fault, because it was like that exact, like, I burn like this too, because I burn like anything. Like, if I go out in the sun, it looks like he tried, but he just didn't get close enough to the tank top, and that's why it was like the full tank top burn. Mm. Techni Block did a great job on the rest tank top.
It's a vest, according to Nico. Let's make sure we use the proper terminology. I mean, look, when we saw a lot of Chappies, it seemed like he applied the sunblock to one area in particular, the lower half.
Yeah, now we know. So that's Techni Block. They did not tweet the premiere, so better get to it, because I want to analyze some tweets. Fresh Stop is a convenience retail brand. They did tweet. I'm excited to see how this is incorporated. Have you heard of Fresh Stop, Rob? I'm sure it's the best brand ever.
We know it very well. It's well known yet. It's actually at petrol stations where people, you know, obviously regas. And their food is also actually very good for garage. Really is very nice fresh food. I mean, you get the best pies from them.
Oh,
and
they're
countrywide.
Oh my God, Rob. Like, I just can't with you, right? I didn't realize that this was an audition. But I'm sure you'll get it.
This is genuinely the truth.
I don't believe anything you say, ever.
I mean, listen, he's vouching for those gas station pies, Shannon. I don't know if you can look into anything else.
I don't know. He just said Biofrat didn't taste bad, so he's lost all credibility on all of these brands.
I didn't say it tastes good.
That's true. But yeah, even that was too high praise. I think
this is why he's the best Survivor player ever, is because he knows how to like couch his words. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to insult you. I'm just going to compliment you lightly.
Yeah, you're a surprising personality, not a bad personality. It's just kind of surprising. And then the last one we have is Future Life. I did not write down what Future Life is. Rob, what is Future Life? That's like a nutrition thing, right? That was what it was.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yes.
It's, you know, I haven't used it before, but like a supplement, you know, like a supplement to help you better your diet and stuff.
All right, maybe that's what we can taste.
Yeah, I think is that the substitute for Biostrat, then they're going to walk in and have like bunches of powder that they can now, I'm assuming it's some sort of like nutritional powder, right? Or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, it's powder. Yeah, it's a powder that you mix with your milk or water or something, and yeah. Supposed to be very healthy for you, and it tastes quite nice. I think I actually do remember having it.
Uh-huh.
And it's okay. Look, it's not your Biostrat sort of taste. But what I'm wondering now, with Steer's gone, what are they going to eat at Merge Fest? And then Merge Feast, what's going to happen there? Are they going to be eating garage pie?
You're going to get a buffet from
sunscreen.
Are they going to be eating garage pies at Merge Fest?
Maybe they will go to the Wild Coast on buffet.
Yeah. No, I mean, maybe instead of, you know, how sometimes rewards, like, Rob, I know you and Nicole went to, like, that Bat Island. Maybe you go to the Wild Coast Sun for a reward and for a day of gambling.
That sounds fun.
It should be interesting.
So Future Life did not live tweet, but they have a whole campaign around the show where Nico is the face of it. He did, like, a whole ad that I watched. I watched in its entirety. It was a whole minute long. So you guys are welcome for that. Look, a lot of brands that Rob is saying is amazing. I'm willing to try them. If anyone wants to send me, like, a gas station sandwich, sunblock, I'm a great person to try that because I get burnt, like, the second I go in the sun. So I would try that out. I'm happy to take a free stay at the Wild Coast Sun for whenever I can get back to South Africa. Basically, if any of the sponsors, I know I haven't been as good as Rob. He can be like the face of it, but I'm willing to take any free stuff, try things out on the podcast, and let the audience know very truthfully what I think. So just putting that out for the new brands.
Mm.
We're a friend of the sponsors of Survivor South Africa. Until they leave.
Until they stab you in the back, apparently.
Yeah, that's what you said about Biostrat, and look what happened now.
I heard Biostrat loves our coverage. I'm just confused about why they're gone. Anyway, that was the Biostrat Variety Hour. New listeners, as Nico would say, this is why you came, right? This is why we're here. Yeah.
Just remember why you listened in this moment right now. It's to hear about Biostrat.
Yeah, we're doing a lot. We're saying Biostrat a lot for a sponsor that's not on the show anymore. We're naming pigeons. We've probably got Rob at least a couple of jobs, I would say, with the brands. Like, I think we're getting stuff done. All right, we also have questions. Let's do that. Dave Backer says, what were your biggest Castaway surprises when you consider what you heard from them in the preseason interviews? Mike?
I mean, I talked about it before. I think Chappies was my biggest takeaway. I would also say Anella. You know, Anella was the first person we listened to, and I will be frank and say that he seemed like a very nice, competent guy. But I didn't necessarily take him as being one of the major players on his tribe as much as he was early on. So I'd say I was pleasantly surprised, I think, by both of those guys.
Yeah, I could co-sign Anella. For me, I feel Amy, like, she was putting out that she was either going to be really quiet or, like, doing way too much as the leader, and it was just going to be too much for anyone, whereas I feel she struck a good balance of being powerful but it not being too heavy. So I could say that. Rob, did you know of any of these people preseason, or had you checked out any of the content? Did anyone surprise you, if so?
Look, yeah, I do know Keon and one other person, but someone that is quite interesting was Jason, who said he would be the best player ever. And I believed it for a moment. I really did. This guy looks like he put it off. And then
he didn't.
Yeah. Well, what I love about that as well is, again, I really encourage people, if you have time, to rewatch the episode from the lens of it being the Jason downfall, because, again, they lay it on so thick, not only with the Marisha and Nicole stuff I mentioned before, but like you said, Rob, Jason declaring himself the greatest player. Even that scene of him saying, when I stuck, you know, the flag into the ground, that was me saying I've arrived onto Survivor. Like, just have that being said by a first boot is just so incredible.
No, I think he is a fantastic guy. He seems to be a really cool person. But yeah, he just it went down. And I can't wait to hear his interview after this.
Oh, it was a good one. Like, I, like, my heart breaks for Jason. I definitely feel, having done 15 hours of preseason content, that I was, like, way too invested in every person. Like, the way that it was going in Zumba, like, from one target that would have made me so sad to another, where I'd be relieved it was off them, but then was so sad it was the next person. Like, Jason had extreme character potential, and I was just heartbroken that one of these people was going to be the first boot, but that's the way that it had to happen. So I know that it's going to be a very painful season, because I was not ready for any of these people to go, and I feel horrible that it was Jason who had to be sacrificed for the first boot.
Jason was another one that I think, to Rob's point, was another one that surprised me, just because, again, and he even compared himself to the Aussies and the Joes, but he essentially, Shannon, was a Zane Knight, in that he was a Seamus in Aussie's clothing, in that he comes across as like this jungle boy, but he ends up like completely spinning his wheels strategically. And I like that. You know, he really made sure in his preseason interview to let us know, I'm not just the jungle boy. I'm going to try some things. I think when you and I did Issa Look with Bryce, he let us know how big of a fan he was. Yeah. And I think we really saw that.
Yeah, very upsetting. We've got, okay, another question. Jason Orach asked you, Rob, can you tell a funny story about Doral that didn't make the edit?
A story about Doral that didn't make the edit?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, hey, that's a good question. I remember exactly what never made the edit.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows this, but when
he was related to everyone on the season? Yeah.
No. But actually, what happened was when Nicole and I went to Bat Island, remember we brought some beers there, we had some drinks. And then I snuck a few, I think it was maybe two or three, in my bag. And then when they took us back to the island, I waited till night. And, you know, when the camera crew started dwindling down, eventually I pulled Doral aside and him and I took a walk down on the beach. And we had a couple of beers. It was like, I mean, it wasn't much, but for him, it was just like amazing that, you know, I went and reserved these just for him. And we sat and had some drinks and yeah, good chat. Yeah.
No wonder he wasn't to give up his game for you. You were seeking him alcohol. That's like, you know.
No, genuinely mates, like, you know, really got along well. So, I mean, yeah, obviously I wanted to share it with him because, I mean, Nicole really had drinks. So for me to bring anything back to Doral was very nice. And he appreciated it.
You basically had that like day 39 celebration on like day 36 when you gave the beer to Doral at the final five.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last question, Rob. This is something we asked all the contestants in the preseason. Now we will ask you, if you could have any celebrity or fictional character be your loved one, come out onto the island as your loved one, who would you pick? This is from Felipe Chamon.
Ooh, any celebrity.
Or fictional character. Or even someone who's dead. We can do that. We can get a very close likeness of them.
Jeez. Okay. I don't know right now. Who I'm obsessed about right now. I'm trying to think of female celebrities I'm obsessed with right now. But not
celebrities. Well, no, we'll keep it on lock for the casting of The Bachelor.
I'll still go with Angelina Jolie.
Angelina? All right, well, I'll have to let the producers of The Bachelor know to try and get her onto the season.
I mean, she is might be single and ready to mingle.
Is she? I don't know anymore. Yeah she is. Since Brad.
Yeah. I don't know what she's been doing since Brad.
So she's still waiting for me. So obviously she's not going to move on after Brad. She's waiting for me to come along. So
that would be your loved one on Survivor. Don't you feel like that would be like a distracting thing? Like, how would she help you on the island?
Do you know, that's actually something interesting as well. You know, I went on Survivor hoping I could find a girlfriend, like, you know, fall in love. I wanted to do a Robin Amber thing.
What? Is that just because your name is Rob and you're like, I can, if that Rob can do it, I can?
Exactly. Yeah, I actually wanted to like make a sort of love story on that thing, but I mean, then production never gave me nothing. All the women there were married or engaged or older than me, like Tanya, like more pointless and stuff. I mean, these castaways are lucky. There's a really nice woman on this one. I wish I was in this season, but anyway.
So that's why you're going to be The Bachelor?
I didn't say I'm going to be The Bachelor.
You did not say it, though. That's what I'm getting with you. I'm starting to work.
Yeah, we're onto your game now, Bentele.
Yeah. Bachelor South Africa, Rob is the lead, Fresh Stop is the sponsor. I now understand why you've been so high. It's all at Wild Coast Sun. We're doing it all in the casino. I can totally view this whole season.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And then instead of offering roses, Rob offers gas station pies to his suit.
Seriously, Mike. Imagine.
Megan, will you take a bite of my pie?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's going to be embarrassing for everyone when that is actually what's happening in the future Bachelor season. So you better be the Bachelor, Rob. I'm not joking. I can't deal with the heartbreak if you're not. So that's that. Right. That's the whole podcast.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic chat, guys. You got this all out of my system. This is going to be an amazing season.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Like this, you know, we do, when you do as much preseason prep as Shannon and I did, and obviously did our little part as consulting with LaRue beforehand, like, you wonder, is it going to be as much as you expected? And I wouldn't say this is exactly what I expected, but like, it was such a fun episode. Such a fun episode to watch. I think there are still some aspects of Immunity Island that we tried to work through here that I think will become developed more. But I think it was an incredibly strong premiere to start off the season. And if this is how they're playing in episode one, I cannot imagine how they're going to play in episodes 15 and 16. There is so much great stuff going on. I really do love this cast, especially how messy they are. And I'm sure there is plenty more mess to come.
Yeah. Also, just like the meaning of having Survivor back. Like, it took me out for a little bit that I was like, oh my God, like, we have new Survivor. I'm so happy that this was the franchise that broke the off season, because I just feel like LaRue deserves it, and it's made with so much love and so much heart, and there isn't another series director who's trawling through your tweets and looking at Reddit and seeing how you feel about things. And even if you don't like it, like, he cares about your opinion. And I just think, like, to have this season that's just made with super fandom at its absolute core and essence, the thing to break the off season, to come out with what I think has been like a celebrated premiere, to have so much fandom around it and excitement and engagement and new fans coming on and saying that they love it, and people who just see the Rhaenyra clip being like, all right, I'm in. And people who just want Survivor, who haven't given it a chance, and they're here now and they're listening to this, maybe wondering, what are we doing with the Biostrat Variety Hour? Like, I just love that. And I'm so happy it happened for this team and this crew and for Survivor South Africa. So definitely a huge thanks to LaRue for going out and the team, you know, in COVID and making it so safe and making it a product that we can watch now, because it's such a joy. And Rob, until you are The Bachelor, where can people find you on social media and see what you're up to? As obviously the ambassador for a whole bunch of new brands coming up.
Rob Bentley Survivor. Just type in Rob Survivor, should pop up.
Survivor. I forgot that ongoing storyline on Twitter. And didn't we take Rob Survivor? Do we still have
Instagram. My Instagram handle is Rob Bentley Survivor.
But on Twitter, there was Survivor Rob, and we took it for a while, didn't we?
Yep, we currently have at Rob Survivor is the name of Now May Pointy Stick, our ghost account that has 14 followers right now.
I should have that. And Rob, what are you actually up to? Like, what can people follow along with other than like all of the jobs I've given you that I hope are true, but may not be?
No, I'm focusing on my app. We need to release by September. So that's all I'm pushing. I'm pushing all my efforts into that at the moment. But I'm also really obviously enjoying the season of Survivor. I'm expecting gameplay we've never seen before. I mean, these people off the bat are numb and they're playing hard, and they're only going to start playing harder as they get number. I remember even LaRue told me this before they even shot the season. He said, we will not allow anyone to do what you guys did, create that family bond and just dominate the game, which is fantastic, which means we're going to be expecting a lot more blind sides. I mean, the only down thing I could say about the control I had on my game was that it made it a little bit predictable, you know, and at least now with this season, there isn't going to be that dominating force. So it's going to be anyone's game. We can expect big blind sides almost every episode, and that's what I'm expecting from the season. It will not be predictable.
Yeah, LaRue's like, we're not going to cast a whole tribe of people who all know each other. It'll just be Inesu, but that's what we're just getting into.
Yeah.
I can't believe we found that out on this podcast, that everyone in Saula knew each other. Talk about the amigos. Talk about the family like they actually were. Mike, what do you have going on in your podcast world?
So you can follow me at @MikeBloomType, or I guess at Rob Survivor, if you want to see the account that has not tweeted. Also, I noticed that Now May Pointy Stick is followed by The Hair of Nathan, which made me also realize that I think, in my opinion, Sean gets the beautician award for the episode because his hair was ridiculous. Did you all notice, like, just the weird ass bedhead that Sean had at one point with his hair sticking up on end?
I mean, I was pretty preoccupied with the daddy's girl necklace that, like, I did get some people saying thank you for explaining that in the preseason that it was his dog's tag, because otherwise that might have been really confusing for them and probably was for a lot of viewers.
In both equal importance, we clarified Teresa's vote being lost and Sean wearing a daddy's girl dog tag around his neck. But yeah, he also had, check out his hair in retrospect. Maybe I'll screen cap it and post it on my Twitter because it is absolutely wild, a la Sean. Like, he has the hair to represent his behavior, and I love it so much. I really love this cast. Follow me at a Mike Bloom type. This past week, Shannon and myself and Sasha Joseph got together to do Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, where we ranked and rated Merge tribe names. Shannon can talk more about that. That was very fun. I also got together on the RHAP Rewind, where we talked about the hit VH1 series I Love Money, which is a trashy reality show from the late 2000s that, no joke, ended because one of the contestants murdered his wife.
Oh my god.
So,
oh my god.
Yeah. So if you want to hear about that piece of reality TV history, be sure to check that out. That was me, Chappelle, and then Brian Scally. And then over on Post Show Recap, which is our scripted podcast network, of course, I'm covering Lost every week with Josh Wigler. I am covering the X-Files with my wife, Angela Bloom. I also, we announced we have patrons of Post Show Recaps. Now, I have announced a new stretch goal. If we get 550 patrons of Post Show Recaps by the end of June, I, Mike Bloom, will learn the language of French. That's what I have set myself to doing. No context needed.
But aren't you on like 500? You're over 500 patrons.
Exactly. Only a little bit more to eat out across that finish line. If you want me to learn French, become a patron of Post Show Recap.
This is the same thing as the tattoo. Rob, you know this, and Mike said he would get a Survivor tattoo as decided by basically like a randomized Survivor season of tattoos being contestants. I know it's sounding complicated.
Listen, that's the thing. You look at my winner pick, and it makes so much sense now.
Okay, but Rob, no, the point is, he said if we got a certain amount of donations that he would get the tattoo, and we were like $100 off those donations. Maybe that's not giving enough. We got to the, you know, Mike raised a lot of money. It was great. But I feel like set higher goals for like major life decisions, Mike.
I mean, listen, that was set by Josh Wigler. I got the tattoo. Yeah, I'm looking at it on my arm right now. I got it last fall, so we're nearly a year into the tattoo. I also have eaten a snake before due to a bet that I made. Like, listen, I pay my debts. I'm a Lannister in that regard. So I will stick by this deal. If you become a patron of Post Show Recaps at patreon.com/postshowrecaps and we get to 550 by the end of June, I will learn French. And I'll plug this next week as well, because I'm sure our guests will have very similar reactions to you, Shannon, in response to this news.
I worry about you. I really do. I mean, I don't know. It's funny to me that you got a tattoo. You might learn French. I mean, that'd be fun, but it's a lot of work. You ate snake. And I still feel like Biostrath was the furthest you went for this. The podcast.
Exactly. Listen, once you go Biostrath, like, the sky's the limit. So
right. I hate what we have unleashed here, because that's all happened since Biostrath. Am I wrong? No,
it's all happened in less than a year. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we did something, and the curse of the segments goes further than I even thought. We've done something to you. I don't know what spell we put you under, but it's bad. Anyway, I'm mainly doing the Survivor South Africa stuff, as Mike said, at Outwit, Outplay, Outlist as well, that we did with Sasha Joseph on Merge Tribe Names. I also did a Friends Reunion recap on Post Show Recap's Patreon, if anyone's interested in non-Survivor stuff. But to announce our guests for next week, we actually have a fun thing happening where we're only doing Robs on the podcast. So we have Rob Cestinino next week. So that's been good with you, Rob, obviously. And then Rob Cestinino, then it might get tricky, but hoping we can get Boston Rob. I think we could make something happen.
Yeah, and then we'll find Bobs and Roberts, and basically I got recently tweeted to me, someone did a Survivor like Robs versus Johns versus Kellys versus something else, so I think we have a stockpile to pull from. But I mean, Shannon and I couldn't think of a better person to start off this season with than with the reigning champion, one of the greatest players of all time, Rob Bentley. I am so intrigued by your Chappies pick in particular. I want to see how your son does in so many ways. So it's going to be a lot of fun no matter what. We're going to be seeing a lot of Chappies no matter how long he lasts.
Thank you guys so much for considering me. Thank you so much for having me. It's been nothing but a pleasure chatting to you guys, and I hope we can maybe do it again another season or later on down the season or something. And this was phenomenal. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Rob, we'll do the Bachelor deep dive when your whole experience is over, but follow us at amygloomtype, at Shannon Gage. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hapups feed so that you don't miss any of these recaps next week with Rob Sestanino. If you're looking for easy links and discussion and where it's all happening with Survivor South Africa, become a patron, tell them we sent you, and it's just like such a good vibe. As Mike said, they're doing watch parties as well, where you can come and watch with Mike, and I guess sometimes with me, I should do that too, and other patrons, which is just such a fun thing to do. So definitely sign up to be an RHAP patron, and that is something that you can do. But this has been such a fun time. Thank you again, Mike. Thank you, Rob, as always. Thank you to you guys for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And now I will throw it to the aforementioned exit interview with Jason, where we name his pigeon Mike Laws. Take it away.
Okay, so this is a first for me. Jason, you are starting off our interview here today with a little bit of show and tell. You and I are on video. Everyone else is not. So would you mind describing for the listeners exactly what you brought to our interview today?
This is an acacia bonsai.
Wow. Look at that bonsai.
This is a crazy tree. Yeah, one of the trees that I have that I made. And then I also want to show you, I brought some of my star pupils. So yeah.
Okay, so Jason is reaching off screen. He's pulling out something gray.
I'm holding a pigeon right now.
That, you're just holding a pigeon right now?
How beautiful is she, eh?
Oh, she's my God. French, hello?
She's French bloodline. Her name is Arya, like from Game of Thrones. Yeah, she dominates left, right, and center. Eh? Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, just look at this. You can see the difference between a street rat and a racing pigeon, can you?
The good news is, yeah. Like Arya Stark, I know you probably have 7 people that you want to get revenge on, and you could send that Arya.
Oh, I have a list, eh?
Well, listen, let's get into it. Now that the show and tell is over at the moment. I love that. Such a great surprise. So, Jason, how has everything been? I'll ask the past 24 hours, because I can imagine there's a difference between, you know, going through those 3 days and now watching it all back after months of buildup.
Yeah. So the 24 hours passed, you know, Survivor journey. It's been crazy, eh? Legit, it's been crazy. It's a lot to take in. And being such a huge fan, come on, I tell you, it's like a kid in the candy store. I mean, yes. I mean, imagine, like, I still, like, say, like, you're on Survivor. Come on.
Well, I want to start where things ended, actually. Let's talk about everything that went down at Tribal Council, because at least the edit was making us believe, like, you did not see it coming for, you know, a mile. Was that true? Did you get any sense at all, whether during the afternoon or at Tribal Council, that your name was even coming up?
John Cena was throwing shade there like you cannot believe it. He was throwing shade there like you cannot believe it. I'm telling you, I did not see it. I really did not see it coming. And that's like, you know, and I keep like, this is the thing that I've now realized with the game, and what makes it so intriguing, that it's such a fast-paced game that a small slip-up like that would put you in a position like me. Like, I should have been more aware about what's happening around me and also what's happening with me. Like, why am I, there's a lot of, you know, but being a fan, I'm aware of, like, different outcomes. So, like, you got, like, this web diagram in your head, and you're like, this one's here, this one's there, okay, this could be an outcome, but now you have to choose the correct one. And unfortunately, I chose the wrong one.
Well, I can imagine that something that was probably distracting you from that web was everything Sean was doing at Tribal Council, where he was convinced he was going. What was your reaction in the moment to all the stuff Sean was doing?
There's a reason why I didn't speak to Sean. Okay, so you see Sean's personality. You see his personality. Like, he sits down, he's going to say what he wants to. So now this is a perfect shield for me. This is a person to sit next to, not maybe in the end, but to a certain point, to sit next to, because he's going to say something. He's going to say something. It's just a matter of time. Something's going to slip. And I predict something like that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm going to eat my words, and I'll eat that humble piece, that piece of humble pie. I will. Okay. But, he was the perfect person to sit with. And I think I try to protect him. Okay. I had 2 situations at camp where Amy was running around saying that there's a an idol in Sean's pocket. Okay? So there's distraction number one. Okay. Then I have an option over here where Keon and Sean are looking to pop and rice. Like, the cracks keep forming and I see them. So I'm moving. Okay? It was just unfortunate for me, okay, that the situation of the immunity idol, not immunity idol, immunity bracelet, like losing the fire challenge, okay, and looking like a seal out of water, I can explain myself there. Just with that outcome, as a fan, I know I'm in a bad position. Hence, I acted the way I did. It wasn't the situation, but literally when the game is so... is moving at such a fast pace. You don't know what to take. Like, it's so quick. Like, and I think that's one thing that I noticed about myself and that I realized is that me judging that type of perception or, like, you know, that reality, a way to, like, hold back, sit back, speak less, listen more. I'm going to take a page out of Rob, season 7, winner's, you know, survival book. You know, mm-hmm. Speak less, listen more. And I should have done it. It's just like my personality, as you can see, is just like so. And it's just like literally throw a kid in the candy store with my type of personality, things are gonna break in that store. Like cabinets are gonna go rolling, things are gonna come out of the vents. Like, you know, there's pigeons and bonsais in a podcast. Like, what the hell next, bro? Like, come on. So that's the thing. And this is why I think I'm feeling okay with it. Because, like, Survivor is really, Survivor South Africa in specific, we are only on season 8. Do you see? Right. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of this, of Survivor. I see the trend of Survivor SA. It's only getting better. Now, I cannot say that my season is going to be the best season. It could be one for the books. Could be one for the books. Legit. But I can only, with Rue and Hungry and, like, the whole, you know, their creativeness, whole involvement in Survivor is just a recipe for, like, something that is going to take the Survivor world by storm. Mark my words. I bet my pigeons on it.
Oh, that's a big bet. I don't want to give Aria up.
I bet Aria.
All right, bold proclamation from Jason. I want to go back to beginning.
You know why I brought that second bird? Sorry, I just want to divert.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Because you guys, like, emphasize on my zoo.
Yes.
I haven't named her, so I'm allowing you guys to name her.
Wait, what?
One of my own bloodlines that I have developed myself, like, from when my pigeon journey starts. She is a result of everything that I am in the sport. Just like I'm going to leave Survivor, you know, I'm coming back and, you know, I'm contributing. This is my bloodline. So I'm giving you guys the opportunity to name her.
Oh, my God.
And I'll be posting on my vision page.
Yeah, I have an idea, but I'm going to wait to consult with Shannon about it. I want to make sure we both turn our keys on that one. But that is an incredibly exciting opportunity. Yeah. Well, speaking of your career, I want to go back to the beginning because you say in confessional, right, like, I didn't want to say what I did to begin with, but then when we started building the shelter, I see this as an opportunity to sort of step up and see myself being valued. What made you want to make that decision in the moment?
Look, it was the heat of the moment. Okay, come on, Tony. The situation that you look at me, you see pigeon rings on your boots. What I wanted to go into the game saying I was a nursery owner, a pigeon farmer or a pigeon breeder. And, you know, I really wanted to take that, but because I knew the implications of stepping up to the plate of structure is, like, I know it. I'm a fan of the game. I know it. Hence, that was my slip up where Renee saw that this guy takes the role unwillingly. But the reason why I took the role is exactly this. A person that was on my tribe is someone that I knew that I share a similar journey with. Like, I'm a fan. I've been trying to get on the show for a long time. And that was Dino. I don't know him. I know of him because of the Survivor scene. Like, he was there, okay? I know he's a game room expert. Like, you know, that's what he does. He's a skydiver, adventurous. That's all I know about Dino. So there was a perfect opportunity, like, for someone to get that idol. That's, you know, it was someone, like, you know, to line with. Like, you know, like, then throw paranoia into the mix and Dino starts and we'll get a bit skittish. Hence the way I kind of my relationship with Dino got a little bit rocky, but with good reason. I mean, this is what's exciting about this game. It's so unpredictable. If I lied about my profession saying, listen, I'm a pigeon breeder, I need to now somehow be in Dino's head. Like, I know it's a dangerous place to be and like jumping to conclusions and stuff, and you got to judge accurately. This is just the role and the part of Survivor. So I kind of had to take, like, as I, like, it's, if I know of his journey, I can only assume that he knows of my journey. I've been in the scene. I mean, my previous audition was like, I don't know, it was like I was in a Borat suit, and then it was like, I don't know. It's just like, so I was there, I was in the scene, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I knew he knew of me. So if I lied about the structure, structural engineering draftsman, I think he was going to call me out on that. Because I started to see that paranoia like very early because of the whole, how he got that immunity necklace. So with that being said, like there was so many, like I got the Keon situation, that, and then Dino. And then I had my situation where the fire challenge and the immunity challenge, like, do you see how the things, these elements start, keep piling up? Hence why it's a complex, brilliant game. This is what intrigues me about Survivor. This is why I apply. Because that type of thinking is the type of thinking that I like. So, yeah.
Well, so let's talk about that fire challenge. You mentioned diplomatic immunity. You come back with this fancy new bracelet, and you told us you didn't want to reveal that to anybody. Did you end up doing so at all before you left the game?
No one did. No one knew. No one knew. I wanted to look. There's a situation like I could have played that diplomatic immunity bracelet in a way that could have saved me. That thought has crossed my mind. But now imagine the situation that I am in where I wasn't going home. With all this happening around me, say for example, I misplayed that idol. Okay, and I wasn't going home. And I played a situation where I exposed that I had a diplomatic immunity bracelet. Okay, and I played like a move, for example, like Jacques Berger did in season 7, where he misjudged the situation and he plays the idol and, you know, he misjudged the situation. Now, if I misjudged the situation, like, you know, I could have used it. But the thing is, I was aware of so much. I was causing so much friction. I was causing so much heat. It was just the position that I was in. I put myself in that position and I earned that position. But it was just the cards that I was dealt with. So, yeah.
I know you wanted to talk about your performance in the immunity challenge. Talk to me about what you call the seal out of water.
Of course, as soon as I come out in that water, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're aware that I am like a wildling. I'm like a jungle boy, whatever.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Okay, yeah. So, the thing is, swimming with shoes, I don't like it, okay? I complied because I understand that, you know, season 7, the situation that Nathan was in. I mean, imagine getting a piece of coral. I mean, that, look, dude, that something that simple can... You can go home. This is how intense this game is. So obviously we've been looked out for. So had Union Moss stepped up, they gave us some shoes. Okay. And we took it. And it was a bit far, it was a bit weird feeling, but like I'm fit. Like I'm not like I'm fit. Like I'm really fit. I can swim, I can run, I can do all these things, okay? But the thing is, as soon as I jumped into the water, I'm kicking. Now I didn't tie the one shoe in properly. So I've got like this situation where I'm trying to save the shoe because I'm like, this is much on the island. I kind of need the shoe type thing. I'm trying to save it. And then a part of me kicks in was like, you know what, stuff it. There goes the shoe. There goes the shoe. Let's go. But now here comes the engineer. Like water and resistance is. Now you got like one free moving thing. You got like some resistance. You see, like, there's two different motions here that I'm trying to compensate. So here, like taking out, I'm like, trying to, like, there's a lot to take in. And the rugs, and like, it's like, there's a lot to take in. It's like, pressure. And it's amazing. This is, like, so exciting, okay? In that situation, get out. You see me stumble. No shoe, bro. No shoe. I'm there. Wah, shoeless. Bah! I'm there. So it was one of those things, and... Hence why I acted the way that I did. I didn't need to. I was aware. Like, I didn't need to act the way I did. I was aware of that. And listen, there's a lot of more strategic gameplay thought that I like, that I think of. Like, that's just how I work. That's how my mind works. Like, there's so many scenarios that I had planned. Like, there were so many things I would like to play, like, that I had planned. But the thing is, like, you know, we're still here in season 8. That's, you know, I'm like I say with my bonsais, you know, like, sometimes I grow a seed, you know. Like, yeah, this is like one thing I've been saying in all my podcasts. In this exact, it's like a little bit reversed, you know? Like, I grow seed, okay? Take those also to grow maybe 2.5 centimeters, 3 centimeters. That's patience, okay? The thing is, survival for me is a lifestyle. I'm here to stay, okay? The thing is, this is not a race. This is a marathon, okay? I've got patience. I'll be back. Legit. We are still early. Like, I mean, have you seen the conditions of survival South Africa? Have you seen how amazing it is? It's amazing. So, like, it's crazy. Like, I mean, all these international guys are going to be coming in now. And, like, they can come. We don't need to form in, like Fiji or Samoa or something. Like, South Africa has, you know, the feel, the survival feel. So, like, yeah, for sure.
So, I was intrigued by, like, who you were trying to go after the immunity challenge. There was one scene where you were like going after Dino with Anella, and then there was another scene where you're like, oh, let me go after one of the women.
No, look. I see that people are criticizing me for saying that I shouldn't have gone for Dino because he has an immunity necklace.
Mm-hmm.
But my friend, that's only valid for one night. You only got protection for one night, dude. Like, do you think that's going to save you the whole game? You just got caught saying, help me to pull from the other tribe, okay? You're being sketchy, like, jumping, and, like, you know, he feels the paranoia. He's been labeled paranoid for a reason. I've been labeled calculating or straight. Paranoia is one of these things. Like, let's own our moles, okay? How we play. And that's one of the, like, that's Dino. The thing is, that's what makes him such, like, that's what, like, I appreciate the character that he is. Like, that's what makes Dino so interesting. That's the thing. He's like the unpredictable. Like, he screwed me over. I know. But the fanboy over here is like, oh, bruh. That's proper. So, like, I take it with a pinch of salt what happened to me. Try to take the negative and turn it into the positive. Learn from the experience. I see the prediction of Survivor SA. I'm investing myself. I already bit my pigeons. So, I mean, you know, come on. So, yeah.
I want to go to something that you actually talked about a bit in your exit interview / like day after video. You talked about how you learned that you had a mean streak or a cocky streak. And that was something new that you learned about yourself. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I think that's my mentality. Look, I mean, in everything, I mean, I get things done. I mean, look at the things that I do, like, in my life. I mean, I'm not someone who sits back. That's just my mentality. And to have that type of mentality has a certain cockiness. You need to own it. Like, and that's just the environment that I grew up in. My parents, my schools, like, they encourage competition. That's why I thrive in competition. That's why I'm so invested. That's why something like this is something to digest and, like, actually take in and, you know, think about, because with me, like, for me, for example, to be in Survivor, like, I had to invest so much, like, my thinking, my lifestyle, my everything was Survivor, okay, because I love this game, it's that much. I mean, you're a fan, I hear how you talk about it. I dig the podcast, I hear it, okay, and you can hear it from me as well. So the thing is, the thing to grow is to also take criticism, and you also, but like in a positive way, so to speak. And I see the cockiness, but I am aware that it is a part of the formula that makes Jason win. And that was what I tried to bring to the game. Unfortunately, what I didn't consider is, like, there's so much that I didn't consider. That's the exciting thing about this game. It's so unpredictable. There's so many holes. There's so many things to turn over. There's so many but ifs, what ifs, could, should, this. And that's what makes it so exciting for me. So yeah, to be a part of it was like, I'm just going back to that saying, like, to be a part of it, awesome, and super grateful. And thank you for for everyone who like was involved in my casting, because yo, that was intense. I mean, how many people would want to be a part of Survivor SA? Come on, let's be honest. Like, it's crazy. I mean, even like in American, Australia, New Zealand, the brand is so like. I mean, to be the first South African, like, you know, like, or of the franchise, you know, the product that's actually finished. Come on. You know? And I mean, especially with these in these tricky times with COVID, where filming was crazy. I mean, I think the cards were in our favors, like from a strategy point of view. I think we just took when we needed to take. And that's the type of mentality that I dig and I embrace.
So the last thing I want to ask is from a structuring perspective, I got to ask about that that shelter that you built on the very first night. I don't think I've ever seen a shelter like that, specifically so low to the ground. Can you explain to me what the purpose was behind that?
Okay, so if you look at the terrain of where we had a bit of a situation where we know it's going to, like, it's the Wild Coast. The rain is uncontrollable. So now there was a situation where we decided we were going to put camp, where the ground wasn't too lacquer. There was like a little bit of a slope where water would collect. Luckily, it wasn't so much that for the first night that we slept under that shelter, it wasn't, you know, it was that solid. Where we positioned it, everything was conditions, like from my in-chargeness or the little part that I had, I think it was the perfect conditions. I mean, you see those guys, when I was sleeping with, like in the rain, I was sleeping like this. I was sleeping warm. I was warm that night. We were like sardines, but we had lack of laughs. We laughed, we chatted. It was an amazing experience. And yeah, that's one also probably one of the things I'll take away from this experience. Like moments like that. It was crazy. I mean, that, like a little achievement like that. When I heard those oaks were struggling in the rain, I was like, yo, for sure. I know I was there. I was a part of that for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, thank you so much for everything that you brought. Both praises and everything you literally brought to this interview, quite, you know, in the form of pigeons and bonsais. You know, obviously wish you could have been for a longer portion of time, but you're putting out there in the universe, right? You're betting those pigeons that you'll make a return appearance. So I'm sure we'll be talking at some point for Jason 2.0 on Survivor.
Oh, thank you.
Well, there you have it, everyone. We had a really fun recap with Mike and Rob Bentley, where we analyzed the episode, got into the sponsors, all the usual shenanigans, as Mike would say. And then we had a very unique exit interview with Jason, where he was kind enough to allow us to name one of his pigeons. Mike Claus the Pigeon is completely iconic. I'm so glad that worked out. So we've had a really good time with this first episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. If this is something you've enjoyed, of course, please subscribe, follow us, tell your friends, leave a review if this is something that you've liked. But as always, we'll see you next time and keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor. Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know it's easy bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.